We ready? All right. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, February 12th, and ask that everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning, everybody. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. If there's anything that anybody would like to point out to us or make sure we take under consideration as we go through our agenda, now is the time. Seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes, and these are the February 5th minutes that we're considering.
Move approval.
Second.
Hearing no changes or additions or comments. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Okay. Second.
By Toot. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims.
Same thing. Aye. Move approval.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. We have all items. We added manure management plan, road closure 1345. Is that all, Shelley? Per the addendum? Was the addendum that came out on Monday. Okay. So just off the original agenda, we added those two items to the
consent agenda. Move the consent agenda with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items. Additional items. Consideration of sending publication of FY14 budget by my hero, Lisa Markle.
Phil.
Tape's coming.
Good morning.
Morning.
I gave you you have in front of you is slightly different from what last week's proposal was because of asset final numbers. Carla and Deb gave me those this week. I got those incorporated into our numbers so that they were there. Overall, the difference is only about $19,000 in the general fund, and the majority of that is Homeward, the contract with Homeward for that, those services, public health services. Overall, the total asset amount from the general and the rural is $774,536,000, okay? We have made arrangements for a staff meeting on the 19th at 1:30 in the afternoon. Alyssa sent that out. We're going to incorporate that with a quarterly staff meeting. So that's when we'll also hand back the budgets, talk to the departments about it. As far as I'm concerned, I think we're looking good, so this is what we'll probably go for final publication, but if there's any glaring numbers or errors from the departments, we'll incorporate those.
And I'll just point out, I like that, I think when we finished our budget work sessions, our first estimate came back as a surplus of $364,000, and this one shows a surplus of $375,000. So we're moving. You can send us as many amendments as you want to this, as long as we keep moving in that direction.
Awesome.
It's better every day.
That's right.
It's better every day.
Questions?
Nope. Sounds good.
Have all of the.
You need a motion.
All of the documents.
We need action to send this to publication, correct?
Do, and I'll have these available for anyone that wants to review them.
I would move the authorization of the auditor's office to send for publication the FY14 budget as proposed.
Second. Further discussion. Hearing none. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Lisa, thanks for your work. Next item is bid opening for culvert replacement projects. Darren Moon. Hi, Darren.
Oh. Got a number of bids here, so this could take a little while. Let's start out. You have four bid tabs there. Let's find the one that starts with project number L-LAF-24 at the upper left-hand corner.
24? Okay, got it.
Got that? Okay, we're going to try to follow across the top here. No bids received from C.J. Moyner or Gehrke, so let's start with Graves Construction. I'm just going to give you the total to fill in at the bottom under the total column. So the first bid's Graves Construction out of Spencer, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total is $78,752.12. 78752.12. Next bidder is Gus Construction out of Casey, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total of $48,776.93. 48776.93. Flip to the second sheet. Murphy Heavy Contracting. Bid bonds attached. Murphy is out of Anita, Iowa. Total of $67,813.60. 67813.60.
67, not 68.
Yeah, 67. Next bid is Nelson and Rock Contracting out of Ottawa, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total of $51,984.12. 51984.12. Next bidder is Peterson Contractors. Out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. And the bid bond is attached. Total of $70,999.95. 70999.95. Okay, down to the bottom of the sheet. Well, no, we're the last one. Progressive Structures at the top. Last one on the top. Bid bond is attached. Bid price of $53,386.12. 53386.12. Now we're down to the bottom under Steger Construction. Bid bond is attached. And Steger Construction out of Dyersville, Iowa, total of $41,952.58. 41952.58. And the final bid is from Weideman. Or Weideman. Bid bond is attached. And Weideman out of Dowse, Iowa. Total of $59,620.13. 59620.13. Now we're going to move on to the second project. These first two projects are tied, so we add the first two numbers together for the award. So the second project is going to be L-U12 at the top. First bidder is going to be Graves Construction out of Casey, Iowa, and bid bond is attached. Total of $88,728.67. 88728.67. Next bid is Murphy Heavy Contracting out of Anita, Iowa.
Sorry, Gus didn't have one?
No.
Okay.
Well, they need to have one.
Tyler, check for me, see if you can find that.
Sure didn't get caught in here. Found it. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, man.
Good. And that's for Gus? Yeah.
Yes. Gus Construction out of KCI would be the next bid.
Yeah. Graves is Casey, and Gus is also Casey.
Graves is Spencer.
Okay. And I wrote Casey down because I thought I heard you say that. Okay.
Bid bond is attached. So total for Gus Construction is $58,915.87. 58915.87. Now back to Murphy on the second page. Bid bonds attached. Murphy Heavy Contracting out of Oneida is total of $71,870.34. 71870.34. Next bidder is Nelson and Rock Contracting out of Onawa, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total of $55,221.27. 55221.27. Next bidder is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Peterson is $79,450.84. 79450.84. Next is Progressive Structures out of Elkader, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Progressive is $62,677.47. 62677.47. Next bidder is Steger Construction on the bottom. Out of Dyersville, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Steger is $47,871.28. 47871.28. And the final bidder is Whiteman out of Dalles, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Whiteman is $69,493.51. Okay. So let's move on to the other two. The next two are also attached, so we have two and two that are tied.
Here, so you could have sprayed it out earlier.
I can give you the apparent low bidder for the first two is Steger Construction. And we'll double-check the numbers and come back next week with a recommendation. But adding the two together comes up with Steger as the apparent low bidder.
Substantially.
Next one is LFMG 30. First bidder is Graves Construction out of Spencer, Iowa, and the bid bond is attached. Total for Graves is $91,034.29, 91034.29. Next bidder is on the bottom. First one, Iowa Bridge and Culvert. Out of Washington, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Iowa Bridge and Culvert is $85,679.70. 85679.70. Next bidder is JB Holland Construction out of Decorah, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for JB Holland is $68,726.61. 68726.61.
Is that they had their bond attached?
Yes.
Yes. Next bidder is Murphy Heavy Contracting out of Anita, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Murphy is $89,770.24. 89770.24. Next bidder is Nelson and Rock Contracting out of Ottawa, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Nelson is $90,258.49. 90258.49. Next is Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Peterson is $96,042.28. 96042.28. Next is Progressive Structures out of Elkader, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Progressive is $71,605.41. 71605.41. Next is Wiedemann out of Dalles, Iowa. On the bottom. Bid bonds attached. Total for Wiedemann is $93,158.79. 93158.79. One last bidder will be a write-in. You can write the name in right after Wiedemann, and it'll be Rognes, R-O-G-N-E-S. Rognes Brothers Excavating out of Lake Mills, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Rognes is $77,084.38. 77084.38. Last project, the L-F-17. First bidder is Graves Construction out of Spencer, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Graves is $124,087.00. 124087.00. Next bidder is Iowa Bridge and Culvert out of Washington, Iowa. First one on the bottom. Bid bond is attached. Total for Iowa Bridge and Culvert. It's very hard to read. $134,730. 134730.00. Next is J.B. Holland Construction out of Decorah, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for J.B. Holland is $95,437.25. 95437.25. Next is Murphy Heavy Contracting out of Anita, Iowa. Bid bond is attached. Total for Murphy is $132,840. 132840.00. Next bidder is Nelson and Rock. Bid bond is attached. Total for Nelson and Rock is $126,348. 126348.00. Next is Peterson Contractor. Bid bonds attached. Total for Peterson is $135,136.60. 135,136.60. Next is Progressive Structures out of Elkader, Iowa. Bid bonds attached. Total for Progressive is $112,819. It's 112,819.00. Next is Wiedemann out of Dowse. Bid bonds attached. Total for Wiedemann is $131,037.60. 131,037.60. And write in Rognes again, R-O-G-N-E-S, Brothers Excavating out of Lake Mills. Bid bond is attached. Total for Rognes is $106,701. Even. 106701.00.
So, Baron, am I correct? You will come back with a recommendation next week. It initial look appears that on the first two projects, Steiger is our low bidder. And right. On these two projects, it appears that J.B. Holland is the low bidder. Just initial glance at it. But you'll go verify all of that and come back with a recommendation next week.
That's correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Next item on our agenda is consideration and discussion of FY13 contract with CFR for Substance Abuse Prevention and Education Services. Deb, hi Deb.
Good morning.
For all of you.
Good, thanks. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Better than yesterday.
Oh, good, good. Well, I submitted a letter giving some background on the contracting process and the contract that has existed for several years between Community and Family Resources and Story County for the prevention and education services. This is something that goes through the asset process. And last year, during the allocation process with asset, funds for all substance abuse services were withheld as we were needing an audit, and there was this additional information that was needed for the asset volunteers and administrative team. CFR's request for funding from Story County for these prevention services for the current fiscal year is $6,480. So throughout some discussion and information that I've shared with you at various points during the year, in the administrative team through Asset has met and discussed just ongoing concerns financially with the agency. As you're well aware, the county took the initiative and had a financial review conducted of the agency, and that was performed by the state auditor's office. We have those findings, and those findings were shared with CFR, and they responded, I believe, just 2 or 3 weeks ago to those findings. We also learned through the asset process, or I shouldn't say learned, but we delved a little bit further into what exactly is included in the Iowa Department of Public Health contract. DPH handles the substance abuse services for the state, and they contract with agencies throughout the state for treatment and prevention and education kinds of services. Here in Story County, the contract holder for the treatment services is CFR. And the contract for prevention services is with Youth and Shelter Services. And so we've met once already with Youth and Shelter Services just to get a handle on what that contract entails. And we're having another meeting this afternoon with them in terms of the prevention services. So my recommendation to the Board of Supervisors is to go in that direction and look at the contract holder for those prevention services and that state grant. There may be dollars above and beyond what the state is providing through that contract and prevention services, and there may not be, but I think it's just practical for the county to look upon that agency that's already providing those services, and they are required by contract to provide services, as they would term it, cradle to grave. So it expands across all population groups, which is what we want to take a look at in the asset process. In terms of the contract with Community and Family Resources for these prevention and education services for fiscal year 13, my recommendation is to the board is to not contract for those services. We have been told by CFR that they've been providing those services during the fiscal year. I'm not sure how they've been funding that, but they have went ahead and they have provided those services. United Way of Story County, which is in the asset process, determined to not provide a partner agreement with CFR back in November. Iowa State University currently does not have a contract through the asset process with CFR, and then the Ames City Council will be addressing this at their council meeting this evening.
Questions for Deb?
No. We've had ongoing discussions, and obviously I think the question I had probably was resolved through the asset panel and discussions that followed at that point. So I have no questions at this time.
Mm-hmm. And now, so this is an action item on our agenda, but no action is the same as not awarding a contract, correct? So, I mean, it's you guys' pleasure. I mean,
well, I think it's important to have a follow-up with YSS to find out a little bit the level of the service and how the contract is structured. The first question that came to my mind when I heard her mention the word cradle to grave is that mean that to me says those who are already receiving service. Okay, what about new clients, new people coming in, and so forth? Does the contract obligate them to pick up those, or is another outside entity the recipients, or could they be responsible for picking up YSS? Does it? So that would be part of what I would hope that the conversation would be, just so that we have a clear picture as to who is providing the service. Because for me, it's all about client service. And we know there's a need out there for substance abuse counseling and other types of services that's associated with this. And my concern would be, is there an agency that clearly can address those concerns and needs in our county?
Right, and getting back to the group that YSS is serving through the prevention and education services, it's birth to elderly. So it's the whole gamut of the population, and whether it's new clients or returning clients, it covers the whole population gamut, which is what the asset process looks at in terms of funding of services is you know, it doesn't matter if it's youth or elderly or in between. We want to look at the entire population group throughout the county.
How long has YSS had this contract through public health?
Oh, several years.
And so what I'm getting to is, so for the last few years, Story County has almost duplicated funding to another service provider. I mean, is that an accurate way to look at it?
It could be looked at that way, and I've tried to find some history on why it's always been set up this way, where the county has funded the services through a different provider versus going through youth and shelter services. And I don't have an answer to that other than that's just the way it's been done. And so I think it is a good opportunity to take a look at what else is out there and see what youth and shelter services could provide and what additional funds they might need if they're to provide services that are above and beyond that state contract.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Deb? I'm going to use prerogative of the chair. We've got representatives of CFR here, and if you'd like to come up and address us at all, now would be the time.
Apologize, I'm a little ill, so I sound a little.
I'm sorry, you're not
around.
Under the weather. I'll try not to touch your stuff, but you want to Lysol after I leave. Thank you for taking the time to meet with me. I'm Michelle Delariva. I'm the new interim director for CFR. Meeting with you guys over the last year, one of the things that we talked about last spring, and Rick, you made it very clear to me that you felt that the services that CFR provides are not questioned. We provide high-quality services to the citizens of Story County, and we always have. We have excelled in providing evidence-based practices. We are always looking at education for our staff and bringing on the types of staff that we need in order to meet the expectations. One of the things that you were very clear about is that you did not want to contract with us with our last executive director. And as you all know, he has resigned due to health issues. Since then, one of the very first things that I did was send out letters to every single one of the people that we contract with in order to find out, are there issues, are there concerns? Please come forward, because like your sign says, communication, it only hurts if you don't do it. That is what I'm all about, is being transparent and finding out what the needs are from all the people. And we did not receive a lot of communication. One of the things that Deb had asked me for was our IDPH grant, which I gave to her immediately. I am not trying to hide anything from anyone. Whatever services, whatever information you need, I'm more than willing to do that. Our agency also started doing weekly updates, so you know where we're at. We are well aware that our financial situation was not at the spot that we need. But we also need you to be well aware that it takes time to make those changes. Our manager was very ill for the last several years, so we were not functioning at the highest level that we could have been, and it's going to take us some time to get back there. By not funding us, that certainly doesn't help our agency in any way.
And if I could, I'll just step in. I really appreciate you speaking to us, and I think you accurately portray the conversations that have been going on now for well over the last year. For me, what it came down to is, and I really tried to draw a line as much as I could between the Richmond Center and CFR, even though it was both under the same management. But we did have those conversations, and you talk about the sign we have on the wall that says communicate. I really felt that we had a hard time, and I'm talking about in the past now,
right,
getting the communication we needed, which is why ultimately we had to go and ask the state auditor to come in and look at things. So then, you know, a series of events goes through, including us moving where our mental health services are provided,
right,
as a county. which doesn't directly impact CFR as I see it, but it clearly created some of these questions where we started looking at things more in depth than we have before. And now what I'm understanding, and now this is directly towards CFR, which I don't think there's a question of the services that CFR has provided in this. It's a question of, are we duplicating services? Are we spending county dollars with a different agency than the one that the state has contracted with? And so that's well, it comes down to that for me. Plus, I trust our asset process. I think the asset process in Story County is one of the great things we do, and our volunteers there, in my mind, really do a great job going through
sure.
and things. And so, and I'm talking for me personally. I'm not speaking for Wayne and Paul in this. For me, it comes down to two items right now. One, asset recommends that we not fund this program. And two, we believe that there's already... I think we know there's already a state-funded mechanism here in Story County that's supposed to cover the entire array of the population. And so, Michelle, for me, that's what it's coming down to. I don't want you to take this, my stance on this, as anything other than I don't believe Story County should be duplicating services out there. This is not intended at all of an indictment of where CFR and the Richmond Center combined now with their new leadership is headed. I think we've had problems in the past. I think those are in the past. I'm looking forward to whatever future we have. For me, I just don't see that as being the prevention services here. So I don't know if you guys would like to address
that. I don't know if there's any more that needs to be stated. I mean, you clearly pointed out the fact that where we are today has caused us to take a look at the services, and when we have identified the possibility that there could be some duplication of services, it's incumbent upon us to investigate that fully to find out if indeed that is the case, and then to determine what is the best course of action as far as who do we should contract with. And I think these have been similar things that we've done over the years. And I can go back several years before you guys came on board. We kind of took a look at LS Lutheran Services and some of their programs and were concerned a little bit about duplication of services. And we have gone through this process, and I think this, again, is a necessary step. It's unfortunate. And I think over a series of years, I think YSS, if I could just maybe put my own personal thoughts in there, they are generally looked upon as a youth involvement program. And so I think the fact that maybe they saw the kinds of services that Richmond Center or CFR, I should say, were doing, they didn't want to kind of step in more or less and say, hey, we could do that too, knowing full well it had already been something that was going on. So I don't know, what the politics behind, why that was never brought to our attention that they had the contract and were capable of providing that service. But I do think it's important that we understand that. And I know I would not be in a position to approve or recommend approval of a contract at this point without us going fully through a full investigation of the duplication of potential services.
That's what it comes down to for me. It's not a reflection of the faith that I have in CFR. It's the duplication of services, and are we paying twice for a service we're already getting? So,
and I think that you're right that our relationship with YSS has been longstanding, and that's why we subcontract back and forth with one another. We primarily treat adults; they primarily treat the children and young adults. So it has been a relationship that we've had for many years. The other thing that I wanted to address just briefly is in the letter that Deb had submitted to you, she said something about Iowa State was no longer referring to us. And I did follow up on that because I found that to be troubling. So I've contacted Joyce Davidson from Student Counseling Services and Lois Smith, who is the care coordinator for the health services, and both of them said that that is not the case. They certainly have continued to provide many referrals to us. They see us as an important community partner, and I do have letters to that effect from these two ladies. And I just wanted to make sure that the information that we're putting out into the public in these types of things is accurate.
Sure. I think that's important. So we'll make sure that first of all, your statement is part of the record, and we'll make sure this documentation is part of the record as well. Anything else that you'd like to share with us before we...
No. Okay. I appreciate the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. As I see it, Board, we have two options. We can, in fact, put this on the table for consideration and then either vote it up or down, talking about the contract, or if there's no more motion forthcoming, we'll just move on.
The one thing you also had asked, and I'm sorry, is to why we continue to provide the service. And I wanted to answer that. The reason we continue to provide the service is that I was communicating with Erin, who is the asset administrative assistant, and asked her, you know, what is the process? Should we continue? And I was encouraged to do so by Jean Cressy, as well as Erin, that we should continue to follow the process. We even submitted our mid-year report because they asked us to. So I didn't feel that it was right to discontinue a service that the county was counting on because they kept telling us to do it. So I would at least like you to consider paying for the services that we have provided, and then we, of course, will look at other alternatives, either charging a fee for the education service. We could certainly look to ISS. We just hadn't done that in the past. I'm not opposed to that. Jason and I meet regularly with all the other subcontracts that we do.
My suggestion totally would be, unless this board chooses to enter into a contract with you, I would highly suggest that you go talk to ISS. Because if that's who we're looking to as a county to provide the service, I don't know that we're all that worried about who subcontracts with whom or anything else. As far as paying for services that we've never contracted for, my first glance is to our civil counsel back there, and I think that'd be a hard thing for the county to do. It's sure a conversation I'm willing to have. I'd need more information, but. If we go down the road of paying for services that we never contracted for, that's opening a can of worms that I think would cause us all trouble.
Okay, so explain or help me understand this, and maybe Deb can also. We're talking about from what time period were we referring to? The contract was not renewed as of what, a year ago?
This fiscal year. We have never contracted with CFR
right.
this fiscal
year. Right, and so... if services were going to be provided, I'm just trying to think in terms of, well, wouldn't a notification somehow be brought to us with the understanding that we will continue to provide service via contract because of a need, and the supervisors would either say yay or nay, we would go ahead and pay for that? I'm just curious. I have not received any type of notification other than that this was our intent, that we would be contracting for services without a contract and would be expecting to pay for it. So you see where I'm going?
Wayne, I think we're on exactly the same page. And Deb, I'll ask you to come back up for this for me. As I understand it, the asset process, we go through and we determine who we're going to fund and who we're going to contract with. Clearly, there was a determination made at some point last year before July 1st that we were not contracting with CFR pending everything else going on. But I think not awarding a contract does not in any way suggest that there's an implication that a contract might be awarded.
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
A year ago, when asset went through the allocation process, the dollars were put into substance abuse services, but we wanted the CFR audit, which we did receive, and then there was other information that we were needing and communicating about. And after that allocation process is finished, then it's up to each individual funder as to whether or not they will follow through then on the contract process. and we hadn't. And that's it's late in the fiscal year, but we're at the point now of having all the information and dealing with it and making that determination whether we not award a contract or award a contract, but it would be contract for fiscal year 13. That's the only thing we're dealing with this item. We'll deal with the asset allocation
here in just a minute. Okay. So two separate items. And Michelle, I don't believe that there's any legal reason that if CFR feels like you need to submit a claim to the county for services you provided, I'd say submit the claim. I mean, for me, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Deb and Jessica to take a look at it and see what it is and if it's valid. But
and I do understand next year's contract. You know, I think that you guys have made that clear that you really want us to work with YSS. That's fine. But I did want you to know that the asset team was telling us to continue.
And I appreciate that. And you said that was Gene and Aaron. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Pleasure of the board.
Well, I think for me, to remove any doubt, I think this board needs to say whether we're going to extend that contract through the end of the fiscal year. And I'm
well,
not
I clearly say no to extending the contract.
Right. And I'll make that motion.
Make it in the affirmative. Make the motion, just so we're clear, as it's written here, make the motion for the FY13 contract.
Exactly. I'll make a motion that we not enter into a contract with CFR for substance abuse prevention and education for fiscal year 13.
Okay. Second. All right. We got a motion, a second. So a yes vote is no contract. I would like it if we went in the affirmative and just made the motion to enter into a contract with CFR.
Okay. I'll change my motion.
Okay.
That we enter into a contract with CFR for fiscal year 13.
And you willing to second that?
I will second that as the motion.
Okay. Discussion. Just to be clear, yes vote enters into a contract. A no vote does not enter into a contract. Seeing no discussion, Toot.
No.
Clinton.
No.
Sanders, no. So there's the position of the board. Thank you. Thank you for being here and coming. Deb, thanks for presenting.
Can I clarify a couple more things?
Just yes, absolutely.
Wayne, going back to a comment that you made about the YSS state contract and us finding out about it. I mean, we've known that YSS has had the contract. It was a matter of finding out what exactly the population group is that they serve, because, like you said, in the community, we know them to serve youth and young adults. But through our discussions with them, we found out that prevention services contract is global. It does cover all age groups from birth to elderly. So I just wanted to make sure and clarify that. The other thing, too, in the letter where I mentioned Iowa State and no longer referring students, there are two sources of information from Iowa State, and this source came from their law enforcement body to the city of Ames, and then the city of Ames shared that with the asset administrative team. So I think it's important to point out there are two sources feeding in that information and may have different connections or interactions with CFR.
So one of them is public safety and one of them is the health.
It's student counseling, okay. Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Anything else on this?
No.
All right, moving on. Discussion consideration of FY 13-14 asset recommendations.
The asset body finished up their recommendations at the January 23rd meeting, and you have those in front of you. Those are the recommendations for the county only, divided up into the four different panels. I do want to point out on panel one there, the very first worksheet, there is a correction that needs to be made, and it's the very bottom line that says YSS, primary treatment, and family counseling. There's a figure in there in the amount of $4,034. That needs to be zeroed out. Those would be mental health dollars that they had asked the county directly for, and they need, because YSS is a subcontractor of Eiley Ball for services, any dollars going to youth for treatment would need to flow through the Eiley Ball contract.
Okay.
You want to go through this panel by panel?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Okay. I would like to go through it panel by panel.
Okay. In panel one, the primary services there are health services, and so we have mental health services, public health services, services to elderly, and dental services, and various services such as Enclave and other employment services then to adults with disabilities. So we have a lot of our mental health dollars tied up into panel one, and it was a little challenging, as you can imagine, knowing what to do with our mental health dollars since we're waiting on information from the legislature on transition funds and then how the system will be funded beginning July 1st forward. So the dollars that you see there, because there are some rather large discrepancies, so the dollars that you see there for mental health funds are placeholders. And that's how we approach this with the asset volunteers, is we're just putting placeholder amounts in there for the time being. We do have our budget request into the board for fiscal year 14, where this all gets fleshed out a little bit more. But we just thought for the purposes of getting through the allocation process for asset that we're using these amounts as placeholders. Some of them are at the request of the agency. Others are below that, but it gives us an idea of what the volunteers are recommending, and then we can cross-reference that with our mental health budget that's already been turned in.
How do these placeholders deal with the $1.2 million in equalization dollars that we hope to get? Or
does not take that into consideration.
It doesn't take it into consideration in what way?
Not take it into consideration in these recommendations, but we do take it into consideration in the budget, in the mental health budget that was submitted to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. So what I'm getting at is, if the state comes forward and says, no, we're not kicking in this equalization, the placeholders we have here would be
accurate. Change.
Would change.
They would probably change, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We didn't know the best way to approach. So we wanted to put some amounts in there based on what the entity had requested or is receiving this year, knowing that those dollars can change. And in the larger printout of the allocations from all of the funders that's on the asset website, we do have a notation on there that these dollar amounts can change.
Okay. Help me with... received in 12-13 is substantially more than the requested for 13-14, which is substantially more than the total of the placeholders that you've got here. So just walk me through that one time.
That's primarily the Eiley Ball. They were new through the process this year.
Okay.
They were one of three agencies that was new. And while we have a contract with them for fiscal year 13, the dollars that we placed in the received column are based on what they submitted a year ago through the RFP process. And then we looked at what their utilization is so far this fiscal year as well. And in some areas, they're asking for more, and they've expanded to group therapy, which we didn't have initially in our contract with them this year. So there are minor changes like that. The other one would be down at the bottom there, mainstream living. We've added in day habilitation services, in supported community living hourly, and supported community living daily. Those were areas that we were providing funds to for individuals who are not Medicaid eligible. And I asked Mainstream Living to put those services through the asset process. So that's bumping the dollar amount up here, Rick, but it's all, but it's been in our budget.
Been in the budget.
Yes.
Okay.
That helped clarify.
It does. I'm trying to find the major reductions from 12-13 to 13-14. And you know, I see a lot of little tiny changes, but I don't see anything major. And yet, I look at the end of the day, and it's a $150,000 change. Is that just the reality of mental health services that we're dealing with now?
Well, an example of that would be at the very top there, the ARC, the Special Recreation Program.
Yep.
They haven't technically received the 25-7 this year because that was a service that we reduced, and
okay.
United Way is picking that up right now. If we get transition funds, we can then pay from the point that we get transition funds moving forward, but it wouldn't be the full 25-7.
So the 909 that I see for receive 12-13 is not really 909 that's out there right now.
Correct.
Okay. That helps me.
That's what they were allocated in the ARCs. That's what they were allocated, but what they're going to end up receiving for fiscal year 13, we're not sure yet. I mean,
okay.
That's dependent on the transition funds. Where the difference would show up would be in the United Way budget, because United Way has been covering that service since July 1st.
Okay.
Also in panel one, the Heartland Senior Services, their nutrition program is a very important program to the community, and there were general basic funds in panel two that were not allocated to the amount of $880, and so the asset volunteers recommended moving the $880 from panel two to panel one for home-delivered meals. And so that's reflected there in the amount of $13,110. That includes the $880 that was moved over. Okay. Any
yep.
other questions on one? Okay. Panel two. Panel two covers basic needs services. So we've got shelter services for domestic reasons, as well as homelessness. We've got probation supervision through CCJ, transportation, legal assistance, crisis child care, disaster responsiveness, and other types of basic needs kinds of services. And the bulk of the dollars for the county in this panel come from the general basic fund. And if you look through there, we've matched up a good share of the requests from the agencies. I will note Access is going through a regionalization process as well. The Attorney General's office is requiring 6 regions to be formed. To provide domestic violence, sexual assault, and shelter services. Access is in a 21-county region, and the shelter that will be funded through the state will be located in Fort Dodge.
Right.
At their hearing in January, Access explained that there's about, from the time that they submitted their asset budget in September to what they know now, there's about a $40,000 difference in what they need to keep the shelter open. They are coming to each funder individually for additional dollars. I did not receive that information in time to have that addressed for this board meeting, so I will be coming at another board meeting in the future with that information as to additional funds that Access is looking for to help cover the cost of their shelter. They indicate that it's full. They turn individuals away. It's used by a variety of folks in areas that surround Story County. So they would...
They were here last week.
Yes.
Angie Shrek was here.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there'll be more to come on that particular service. Any questions on panel two? Panel three would be the services provided to youth and children. So most of our daycare services are in here. As well as some of the mentoring services and after-school kinds of services. The bulk of the dollars here are, again, from the county's general fund, and we do have some local option dollars thrown in there as well. Between United Way and Story County, we are the primary funders for Storytime Childcare located in Maxwell. And We've worked with that agency in reducing the gap between the dollars allocated to them from the county and their utilization. We finally achieved that in fiscal year 12. So I think we're on a good track too for fiscal year 13. So we're really looking at utilization there. And Jane Underhill, the director there, has worked hard on that. YSS, with the closure of Big Brothers and Big Sisters and their mentoring, YSS is picking up some of those kids. Big Brothers, Big Sisters is finishing out the service provision to those matches that were already made as of July 1st, but any new matches that need to be made, YSS has been picking up, and YSS wants to expand their mentoring services into the summer months. It's historically been just during the school year, but they want to expand that into the summer months.
Yeah, but was I aware or felt or heard, did YSS try to go after the contract for Big Brothers and Big Sister service, or was that something that you're not aware of? Somehow I thought they applied for something recently but did not receive a contract, and I'm not sure which one it was, but...
I'm wondering if that's something that's outside of asset.
I believe it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
I guess I'm not
okay.
familiar
All
with
right.
that. I can do some follow-up.
I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that some of the services that Big Brothers and Big Sisters had provided, that whether they were trying to, you know, be awarded that contract or not, and that was one of the things that fell through. I can follow up, too, with George.
Okay.
I just...
Okay.
Somehow remember there's some discussion about a contract that they had applied for that they weren't awarded.
I think there were some dollars through public health, maybe, that Big Brothers Big Sisters had. But, I mean, they still have, Big Brothers Big Sisters is still operational in Polk County and,
right.
and some of the other
exactly.
surrounding
mm-hmm.
counties.
Right.
So,
okay.
But YSS had talked to ASSET about picking up additional kids to mentor
right,
as a result
right.
of Big Brothers Big Sisters closure. Okay, any other comments or questions on panel 3? Panel 4 tends to capture kind of a variety of services, the public education and awareness services, services delivered to families, volunteer management, those kinds of things. Again, the general basic fund through the county covers a majority of that. We do have some mental health funds in here, and that was a request from NAMI for their wellness center. They had made that request for this year, and that, again, was a service that we had cut, but United Way has picked it up until we know more about the transition funds. I don't think the county does have some unallocated dollars in Panel 4 to the tune of $7,922. Those are sitting there. That's primarily as a result of the volunteers recommending no funding to CFR for those services.
But now that we've taken action on that request for FY13, for FY14, so there's some dollars sitting here. Do you expect that that's part of your conversations with YSS? Okay.
And depending where that goes, if the dollars aren't needed there, it may be something to consider when we talk about dollars that Access is requesting.
Right.
So.
Which I think, off the top of my head, without my notes in front of me, I want to say that. They indicated they were going to come back to the county for another $16,000. Does that sound about right? I mean, I may be missing a little bit, but
I think that's what that's allocated to them right now for shelter.
Maybe that's what it was, and
it'll be a total. Right now, the recommendation is $7,300 for shelter, and then I think they'll come back with another $9,000 and
okay.
some change. Any other questions or comments on panel four? I do want to note Red Cross, there's actually a reduction in funding to them recommended for fiscal year 14 compared to fiscal year 13. And that's largely because of continued concerns with their presence here in the county, the volunteer base. As I understand it, it's a lot of the volunteers that are trying to keep the office open at this point in time. In terms of the county, we still do not have a fiscal year 13 contract with Red Cross, so they have not drawn down any funding for fiscal year 13, despite letters and communication going to them about the need for that contract in order for them to access those dollars. So that's another change. I mentioned earlier, Eileen Ball was new to the process this year, as was Herta, who's providing the transportation now in the county, as well as the Salvation Army. And the Salvation Army came to asset making requests for basic needs services, payee services, and disaster responsiveness. And out of those three services, the county, the recommendation was to provide some county dollars for disaster response. The payee services would have required mental health dollars, and it was determined early on that we want to restore the services that we've cut before we add services to our mental health fund. So there were no dollars that went to that particular service. There were no dollars that went to the basic needs services because it is a duplication of what we're already providing in our general assistance program.
Super.
Oh, I do need action.
Yep. On these and before we get into action, I just want to, let's go back to panel one. I will say I was highly concerned that the receive for SY13 at 909, total of 909, and reducing that for this year to 743 really concerned me, but I got to looking at some of the numbers and then asked my hero, Lisa Markley, to go add these up. The actual total, if you look under the receive 1213 and add up all those numbers, it does not total 909. It totals $667,000. Now, I don't know what the breakdown is in terms of where it comes from, general basic or local option or all of that. But so clearly we've got an Excel spreadsheet error there where it's adding something it needs to not be adding. But in reality, what we're talking about on panel one is going from 667 up to 743, which actually I feel a lot more comfortable with where we are with everything. And so if you could just look into that for me, why that number is shooting out there inaccurately, and if there's something we need to come back and take a look at, I'd like to do that.
And the 667 is a total of all of those figures.
All of those, yeah, everything in the column, just where it says 909, yeah, where it says 909, it should read 667.
Yep, okay. I will follow up on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
And overall, each year, there is I think there was a request for, was it close to about 3% increase from the overall askings? Or at least that's what we kind of came up with.
But I think the request basic, was higher than that. 3.25% increase in general basic in allocating the dollars.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The total amount for asset with all the funders is $3,287,942. So that's across all funders. Now, there were dollars in at least United Way in the city that were unallocated, and United Way will use those dollars for special project kinds of requests. And the city needs to determine how they'll use their unallocated funds.
Yeah, and it seems like all in, the county is up from, I think a few years ago we were just under $1 million, and now we're somewhere around $1.2 million, all said and done, that I think we're in to asset. And I love the asset process. Deb, if you wouldn't mind, if we could just get a spreadsheet for panel one that accurately reflects those dollars, that would be outstanding. And we do need action on this.
I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation from asset.
Second.
Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Deb.
Yep. Thank you.
Good eye on that.
It just, yeah, you know how I am with numbers. It didn't feel right. All right, next item on our agenda is Resolution 1351, final subdivision plat of the Messenger subdivision located, I'll just go to under the ownership of Mark Lingle and Dale Messenger, located in Indian Creek. And our buddy Charlie is here. Hi, Charlie.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Second. It's been inactive for so long. Okay. The subdivision plat actually is called Rolling Hills Plat 3, so if I refer to it that during this presentation, you'll know it's the same thing as the what we listed as the Messenger subdivision plat, but the property owner is Dale and Dorothy Messenger and Mark and Lori Langle. Property location, generally it's located in Section 15 of Indian Creek Township. The two addresses involved are 30558 and 30620 Rolling Hills Drive. The size of this subdivision area is a tad over 13 acres. Zoning in place on the property is R1 residential, and both properties are classified currently as in a residential use. The development plan does designate the property as rural residential. It does contain some natural resource areas, so everything is in par on that. And cities within 2 miles, the only city that is within 2 miles of this plat is Maxwell, Iowa. This map here kind of shows a general property location. It might be a little bit hard to see here, but the two properties involved are this larger parcel here, and there's a smaller parcel up here. This area down here used to be part of the Rolling Hills subdivision, but sometime after that subdivision was platted, a bunch of that area, the lots were vacated and further split in 1992 after that. Looking at the nature of the request, it is to consider a minor subdivision plat, which includes one lot and one parcel. The two are being adjusted in size and will conclude into developed lots in the R1 zoning district. So we're not changing the number of parcels or lots here. It's just adjusting the size between the two of them. It is being reviewed as a final subdivision plat, and the Planning and Zoning Commission has provided a recommendation to the board, which I will go over here in a second. Looking at the plat here, you kind of see where I zoomed in on it on the right-hand side here. The old lot line was straight east to west right here, and the proposed new lot line right down here. A few of the pictures I have here will show you this is the current house on that northernmost lot. Kind of the area that's being swapped here, you can kind of see maybe a little bit here where that old lot line or the current lot line is right now. New lot line being proposed will kind of match up with this tree line. So more or less this land area, which used to or is currently owned by the property owner to the south, is going to shift to the property owner to the north. Again, that kind of shows the area with the house that will be included. A few things that we did point out in the staff report, written and signed statements from the appropriate officials of utilities. We did waive all those just as there is going to be no new houses with this, so we didn't find that particular requirement necessary. Same thing with the fire department's letters. Contours for the plat were waived. Setbacks from the existing structures were not shown, but we were able to verify that all those will continue to be satisfied. Same thing with the easements, the public utility easements on the lots. Those were not included. However, the Planning and Zoning Commission did not recommend that those be shown on the plat. Again, as this area is already currently built out, probably not a need to show those public utility easements. So with that, the Planning and Zoning Commission last Monday did recommend approval to the Board of Supervisors. They included two conditions listed on the screen here, and I can relay to you that those conditions have been satisfied. A new plat has been submitted to us, was over the weekend, wasn't included in your packet, but we have reviewed it, and I did send it up to Scott Wall at the auditor's office, and he looked it over and did note that the concerns that they had with the initial plat have been resolved, so everything's good to go on that. With that, and if you have any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer them. I believe Mr. Langle, one of the property owners, is also here, so if you have any questions on their side, he'd be here to answer them and leave it up to the board.
Well, it seems like you've gone through the process and got the answers to the areas of conditions that were addressed, and that sits well with me.
I'd just say if Mr. Lingle wants to address this, that would be just fine. It, not necessary, I don't think.
I don't have any questions for him.
Anything else for Charlie?
No.
All right. Right.
Motion to approve Resolution 1351 with the first alternative.
And I will second the motion.
Further discussion? Hearing none, Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1351 passes. Thanks. All right. Agency reports. American Red Cross. Tony Burke. Tony's not here. All right. Moving on. Departmental reports. Darren Moon.
Go ahead. Yeah. All right, go ahead and get started. I guess first I wanted to update you on how the winter's going thus far this year, budget-wise and operational. Put some pictures of them here of the first. We had two blizzards. One was kind of a semi-blizzard, but this one was definitely a full-blown blizzard here right before Christmas. This is kind of what we have to deal with. This is a paved road. It's hard to tell. This is E29, to the east of the interstate. There's probably three or four locations like this just along E29, so when we get the big winds and snow packed together, it makes a lot of our pavements impassable. I try to tell people not even to try, because you can't even see that you're going to run into another car in front of you when stuff piles up like this. But looking back the other direction, this you can actually way back in the backgrounds where that first picture was, and then up the next hill is this. This had six or seven cars in it. And that, even us being out there, that's why it's so dangerous and scary for us, because we can't see where we're going, and when the cars start piling up, we go through there with a mortar grader, the V-plow on it. You don't know if you're going to hit a car or a person. So that Thursday when the blizzard was coming through, we're out there basically on emergency missions and trying to help people. We're not trying to keep these open, because it almost does more harm than good, because it'll just pile up more snow on the edge and make things drift in even higher. So not a lot we can do till the winds go down. Right behind those cars was this. It's a delivery truck. It was actually out of Minnesota. So the next day, it's hard to get all these cars out of there, because they're from out of state and you have no idea where they are. The car's locked up, and so we struggle with finding that owner, but we work with the sheriff's office to call all these license plates in, and they try to call the owners to get out there and say, we've plowed up to the car, now come get it out today or it's going to get towed. This was the last car to get out on that Friday morning, delivery truck for Pizza Ranch, or delivery car. But as a last resort, we actually ended up, we gave them a whole day to get this car out of here. We actually just hooked up to it with one of our plows and just pulled it off the side of the road, because cars were going around it and it just wasn't a good situation. So in emergency situations, we'll pull them off the side, but in general, we don't hook on to private cars because it can cause damage. Like I said, Thursday, we had all kinds of emergency missions, pregnancies, people stuck in cars with young kids, just basically rescue missions on Thursday. And then Friday morning, we're out at 5 a.m., and we actually had to put mortar graders on the pavements. We don't do that very often, but when they're that drifted in, they need the extra force to push that snow out of the way. So they helped out, and by doing that, the mortar graders were not quite able to get through their entire district that day. They worked, I think, a 13-hour shift, but they had a few miles. Some got through all of them, but there's a few that had 5-6 miles of gravels that they didn't get all the way through, so they had to we were back in Saturday morning finishing up. But if we didn't have to get on the pavements, we could have got all the way around in that one day on Friday. Just throwing a picture of gravel. It's hard to tell by the picture, but that's 3 or 4 foot deep. I couldn't get through it. I wasn't even going to try, but that kind of shows the importance of mowing. Just a little bit of weeds on the outside of the back slope causes drifts so you can't get through. So we mow the four slopes, but we just don't have the manpower or the time to mow the back slopes and all that. But it doesn't take much to cause those drifts when it gets that windy. More recently, we're having more issues on the gravels with ice. The pavements are fine, but then we get these ice over conditions on the gravel. This is one kind of out by Hickory Grove. Is a long downhill slope that I was actually out in the morning and saw this car heading up the hill. It was vacant. They tried to get up it the night before and just stopped it. And there's a curve coming around the hill, so I told a motor guy to get out there to start scarifying. You can see he's done that all the way here, and he stopped right there. But this girl came around in the morning on her way to school and saw what was going on down there. He was here, and the truck, or this car was here, and she slid hundreds of feet all the way down that hill and actually hit the motor grader and this other car, but there was absolutely nothing she could do. But we scarify, and we put rock chips out there at times, but we can't cover all 700-800 miles of gravels, but we try to hit the bad spots where we can. But there's going to be times when there's slick conditions out on the gravel roads, and doesn't take but a little bit of sun to get on that rock to get the rock poking through where you get traction again. So sometimes it just takes time. It's just a couple projects we wrapped up right at the end of before winter hit. This was right next to the interstate. This has been eroding for years, and it almost was getting up to our gravel road right before the interstate. And with the dry conditions we've been having, it was perfect time to get in there and rechannel this and protect the bank, or we were going to lose our road pretty soon. A little bit of same situation here. Actually, this whole area was about 3 or 4 foot higher, so the one water came, it just hit this bank over here. That had silted in over time, but the perfect use for our newer skid loader we never had in the past to get down in these areas in dry conditions, and he was able to move all that dirt over here, and then we protected that bank over there. And typical problem with our wood bridges, the back walls only go down so far, and then it continually scours deeper and deeper over the years, and when it gets underneath the back walls, it's kind of dangerous because it creates big holes at the end of the bridges when it sucks that material through. So we're adding some riprap. This is not done. They were dumping it off the side here, but so they had a little more work to do to complete that. But that'll keep it from going under the back walls and extend the life of that bridge. Some of the other things we do in the winter time when we don't have rough winters as we have in the past few years, we have extra time to do some shop work. We do a lot of brush clearing. This is just one instance where we have some guys with some extra talents that are able to do some work. This is actually a heated building. We're also redoing a lot of our buildings and reorganizing. This is all used for our sign shed, but we are moving that over to another building, and you'll see what we're doing with this building. It was heated. These doors were just flapping on there. So very inefficient. So we dug out to put a foundation in, all with our own crews, and we have guys with siding experience and everything. So that's what it looks like as of last week. Put new doors. They sided the whole building. Concrete foundation there. So we're now going to be able to use this building as a diesel truck heated building. A lot more efficient use of that building, and keeps our guys busy in the winter. This is our other older shed that we're moving the sign shed to, and just had some office area up here with rafters and a lot of safety concerns with that rafters with IMWCA and stuff, so we're just taking those out. That'll provide more room to drive trucks through there too. It really restricted us, and now that has doors on both ends, so the sign truck can pull right in there, just load up with signs and pull right out the other door, and we're putting our inspection lab and some other things in this building, but just making more efficient use of what we've got. While I'm talking about our sheds, I just wanted to point out some of our recent changes. A lot of this came up because we had two recent retirements, so that made us look at some of our shops a little closer. I guess first I'd comment, the stars are where our out shops are, and the main shop here in Nevada. I think we've pretty well made the decision that Slater shed, we're going to stop heating it, use it for cold storage. It's our worst shed of all nine, condition-wise, so and it's not set up very well for us. So the truck driver out of here retired. The motor grader, we're actually going to move up to Ames shed. So this one will no longer be used except for cold storage. The Ames district Motivator currently has a district like this, so he's going to just move over here and he'll be still in his district. So this will be pretty much closed down. The other thing that happened with the retirements, Motivator district here, he decided to take the truck in Colo that retired. We do have a bit of an issue with keeping motor graders operators, and we're discussing that with Alyssa, and it's at the same level as the truck driver 3 position, but it has a lot more responsibility being a motor grader operator. So they have a tendency when a truck driver 3 position comes over, they take the truck, and we can't keep the motor grader operators. And it's important to have trained and experienced motor grader operators over time, so we're trying to address that issue. But so this, McCallsburg shop just had one truck driver. He ended up taking the motor grader position, so that left the shop actually vacant. So we're considering doing the same thing with one of these two. We're not sure which one yet. The issue is that we have salt at this one, salt sand bin. That's where Story City comes to get salt. We don't really want them to have to drive this far over here, but we might have to do that. This has room for salt, so we could move the whole operation over here, but we're considering one of these two sheds, we're probably going to shut down the heated and use it for cold storage too. But right now, McCallsburg's vacant, so for the time being, McCallsburg's shut down. And those two open positions, we're currently interviewing for those. We're about halfway through the interview, so we hope to get those filled here in the next month. Projects, this one just started last week. This is a snapshot from our county website. We try to put updates whenever possible on the bottom of this. This is the bridge here that started, straight east to Gilbert on E23. So the bridge is out already. That should take probably 3 to 4 months to get that put in, but the contractor wanted to get a real early start on it, which is good, so we'll have that done by harvest for sure. Yellow shows our other projects. This is the bridge I just talked about. The 4 yellow dots here are the ones that we just let this morning. The other ones are all paving projects. We'll discuss the bike trail country club a little bit later today. This will be the major paving job of the year, E18 from McCallsburg to Ziering. That'll happen sometime this summer or fall. These two lines here are really seal coat jobs out of our maintenance money. We're trying to squeeze in enough to get the main street through Fernald seal coated. It's been neglected for a long time. Needs to be done, and then also West 190th. If we have enough left, we're going to try to get that seal coated too. Last one is State Street. That's a cooperation with the City of Ames funding. We had a public meeting on that actually last night. A lot of attendees, so I just kind of wanted to update you on the situations that were discussed. The project goes from here up to about right here. And that was one of the big discussion points, is that people could not understand why we didn't extend it up to Mortensen. There's a number of reasons behind that. It starts as an institutional road from here up. That means Iowa State University is responsible for it, so there's not a lot we can do. Warren Madden was actually at the meeting last night and tried to explain that that is their responsibility, and they're struggling for road money too, just like everybody else. So they don't have the funding, but that's, in case you get questions, that's why the project stops right there. It turns into an institutional road, and we're using federal aid money to do this with the City of Ames MPO, and they cannot use that money on an institutional road like that. Just interesting discussion. There's been talk about a roundabout right at this location. I think it'd be the perfect location to put something like that in, especially with athletic traffic out in this area at certain times, but Iowa State said they're considering it, but
they have all the way through the intersection? Iowa State has all the way through the intersection of Mortensen and State?
Yes, I believe so. Yep.
How much of Mortensen does Iowa State have, any?
I don't know the limits east-west. But some of the other discussions were based around the safety of this curve down here, and there's a lot of shoulder washouts, and the City of Ames had decided to pave the shoulders, which I agree is a good idea. They're going to extend bike lanes across Oakwood, too, so it's going to essentially make a loop here. So paved shoulders will help with the shoulder washout area and some safety concerns around the curves. Speed limits are also an issue, so that could come up at some point. This intersection here has a lot of houses back here. The traffic coming up the hill, they have a hard time getting out of there and getting up to speed, so they'd like to see it lower, but that's really up to the city of Ames, and we'll adjust ours to match theirs. But that could come through the board at some point to match theirs. But those are the main issues. They plan to let this project in June, so the earliest it could start would be in July. And it's essentially an overlay project over the existing PC, but they're adding the shoulders. Access issues are the other concern, and it'll be kept open at all times. It might be one lane at a time, but at no time will it ever be closed down. I never got a chance to update the board on DD-10. We had a contractor replace a 300-foot stretch of tile on DD-10. Had some issues with a tile that paralleled the top big tile that we replaced, and this was private and this is district, so it made a difficult situation. We couldn't technically spend money on the private tile, so we tried to have the contractor avoid it, but it just fell apart when we got close to it. So we worked on it all the way up. The contractor did a great job, helped try to avoid it. Then we got to the very end to realize it cut off, went a different direction, so that had been abandoned at some point, which is frustrating, but we had the landowners out there and everything. Nobody knew what was in there, but that's what you deal with tile. It's underground, so nobody really knows what's down there. So the only additional cost we had was they had to connect us to just right up here, 15, 20 feet, to keep that tile going. But and then the rest went pretty well. I think we ended up $23,000 is what it cost in total. So we stayed under that 25 threshold that I wanted to do. Bridge inspections. Difficult to see here, but there's yellow dots. We had 8 bridges that needed immediate attention. One here, one below it here, and way down here. That's a record for bridge inspections. They're inspected every 2 years, and if they see something that needs immediate attention, they let us know and we got to do it quickly. But we had 8 of them. Here's a few examples of what they were. This is why they're kind of unpredictable. They pulled this out. It looked fine by the eye, and they always pound on them every year and drive spikes in to see how they are, but the inside was completely rotted, so it was just a core is all this was. And the next one is bad, too. You'll see it. Some of my slides coming up. We can do some individual pile repairs, but when you get multiple piles in a back wall, these piles act in axial compression, and they also take flexure and hold that back wall up. So our pile repair doesn't hold the back wall up, it just keeps the load. You'll see what that is on some of these sides. So, well, this one we hired a contractor to do 2 replacements where they lift the actual deck off and drive all new piling. So we're doing that on this one. This one was a little different situation, not much shown, but it was completely rotted out. And it's a long steel bridge with only 4 piling, which is kind of rare. So it had a lot of load on it. This one we're repairing in-house. What we do is we had to dig down until we got the good piling. And then we cut a CMP in half, put some steel, and we wedge a new pile in there on top of the old one, and then encase that in concrete, looking down inside of it. The new pile we stuck in there in the steel, and we pour concrete in that. Like I said, that'll get us the load, but you can't do that for a lot of piling. That's just for 1 or 2 in a bridge. Another one, this is the type of restrictions we're putting on. This one was fairly easy because the existing bridge was so wide. We only had to restrict 3 or 4 feet, so it still left a 2-lane traffic, and this is another one we're able to do our in-house power repair on. This one's the south of Colo. Same thing, pile's gone, but this one we're going to do our temporary repair, but that's just going to allow us to get this one in the program because this has, I think, 8 pile on each side. It's a really wide bridge, and it's all in bad shape, so this will be a real temporary repair. get it back open to traffic till we can get it in our program to replace. And the last one they added was it's a concrete bridge with steel beams in it. The concrete's just crumbling. It's really old. You can see we've tried to keep the rock on top of it by putting signs and stuff over time. And we're looking at trying to do some patching, but it comes a time when bridges, there's no repair.
Well, and we should expect to see more and more of this, right?
Yeah,
correct. Remind me, it's 280-ish bridges? Yep,
284 bridges.
284 bridges, and a lot of them are at the age where we're going to start seeing more and more and more of this, right?
Yeah, correct.
Is the County Engineers Association sharing some of these type of pictures with our legislators?
Oh, yeah.
And they're contemplating increasing the fuel tax?
And a lot of counties are ahead of us on the curve of closing. I talked to a county that closed 8 bridges last year.
Right.
Just closed them for good. So it's coming.
Our time.
This is that same bridge. We just restrict it for the time being. But the rail's actually knocked off, so we're going to replace the rail, and we're going to actually bump it out a foot and put a guardrail on there. So that'll tide us over until we can figure out what to do with it. This is the big bridge that we had to restrict. It's just down by Hickory Grove. This bridge takes a lot of damage from debris coming down the stream. The piers are not aligned with the water, which is one problem. You can see they're just getting destroyed. The big problem is this pile right here is completely gone. It's just got hit with so much debris, it's almost non-existent. A couple of these other ones in here are rotted. These are protection planks to try to protect the piling. You can see they're getting knocked off, but those are kind of a catch-22 because you put those on there, and then you can never inspect the piling to see what kind of shape they're in. So you almost can't put them on there because then you don't know how to rate the bridge for loading. So it's a tough situation. This is that pier. That pile's just shot, gone.
You know, remember back when you had that wrap kind of around one of the one pilings?
Mm-hmm.
Is there such a way that something could be built around some of those deteriorating ones which would divert the debris? When the debris came, yeah, it would go around it? I mean, I don't know how deep you'd have to go so that they would stand.
Yeah, you can see this one has a steel H-pile driven here to help that, and this one actually had... I mean, this was both.
Okay,
these were both put in a long time ago. I don't know why this one didn't ever have one. It may have, and it got broke off. But
okay.
I've already got an estimate to drive an H pile in here. It's $7,000 to drive just a pile out here. But then we still got to fix this one somehow. They can't get it underneath the cap.
Darren, this is the one that you've reduced the width on, right, all the way down.
Yeah, I'll show you a picture of that.
And
the first thing we did is we posted it for. It's been 10 tons for a long time.
Right.
That's pretty much reduce or almost eliminates all your ag loads. So
right.
Ag traffic has not been using this bridge for a long time. Originally, they said we could post it 4 tons. I was like, great, we can leave the bridge open. And a week later, the email spec said, oops, sorry, we double-checked the calcs, and you got to restrict it, too. So we actually had this left over from that bridge we replaced from Maxwell last year, a year before. It says, warning, bridge ahead 12-foot wide. So all we have left, the original bridge is 18 foot wide. We had to restrict it down to 12, so it's just one lane, and we put the red flags to warn people to load. But it's just to that point where...
How many questions, comments, or concerns have you gotten since you've reduced it down?
Very little.
What kind of usage does this bridge get, do we know? I mean, obviously no ag traffic anymore.
The only concerns I hear is just people use it to cut across the Hickory Grove, and... They all say, well, it's really not necessary, but we just cut across.
How well do you know that bridge?
Really well.
What kind of problems does it create for us if it wasn't there?
Well, the only question I have is...
Here's where it is.
You it's straight west of Hickory Grove, just off the pavement.
And it's a two-mile stretch. The bridge is right here. The first house is right here, and then there's four or five houses, but this whole stretch, a mile, does not have a house on it even.
Where would the four houses that live there have to go?
This is pavement, so I'm sure they mostly take that anyway.
Darren, this is for me, and I don't know the right process. I believe it's time that you bring us consideration of closing that bridge permanently. Before we spend $7,000, before we do anything else, I think it's time for us to have that conversation.
There's other issues with the bridge. It's on their scour critical list. That's down to 5-6 bridges now, and that's one of them. So we got to bring a bunch of riprap in there. So that's another consideration. I did some checking in the how we've done this in the past. We've really only tried it twice. You have to have a public hearing to actually close the bridge, and at that public hearing, you take requests for damages, and you have to be adjacent to the bridge to request damages, and I'm not sure what they would be for a bridge. It's usually a road we are talking about. We actually did one. It was maybe 15 years ago, down by Maxwell. Did the whole hearing process and closed that bridge. There was another one, the Skunk Bridge down by Cambridge, that they went down the road. They actually sent letters out, and I pulled a copy. That was 20 years ago. It had two questions in it. One was, should this bridge, this actually had the approach washed out, so they had to do repairs or close it. So they asked the residents in the area, should they repair it or close it? And the second question was, can Story County residents afford to pay the taxes to continue to support this bridge? So you got a lot of yeses and then nos. But they decided to repair it and keep that one open. But so that's something we could do, or we could just have the hearing, and this probably doesn't affect as many people as this bridge did down by.
During the height of the summer season for Hickory Grove and so forth, do we have an estimate of the ADTs in and around that area?
Traffic count is 80, which is fairly high for a gravel road, but I think it's mostly to the houses, and the rest is just cut through traffic. I don't know if it's used for ag uses. That's why, I think the issue with the hearing is it wouldn't catch a lot of those people that use it as a cut across to get to Hickory Grove.
I'm not really too concerned about that.
There's a lot of routes to get there.
A mile and come in from a different direction, or they can go 2 more miles or 3 miles and go down a paved road.
If you accept that this is a conversation that we're going to have repeatedly over the next several years, it makes sense to me that we pick a bridge that is a reasonable one to have the conversation about. I think this fits. And then for us to go over and above. And Darren, I'd ask you to check with you said one county closed down 8 last year. Check with those counties about the process they have used. Work with our civil attorney, Jessica Reynolds, to make sure that not only we're doing the things that we have to do, but we're going over and above to give plenty of opportunity for public input. Because if this is something we're going to have to talk about down the road, we want to establish the process the right way and move forward. But I just feel really, really strongly that we need to have the conversation about this bridge before we spend any more time and money on it.
And what really needs to happen is it needs to be replaced, and that's probably $700,000 to $800,000. So
yep.
That's what you're weighing here.
Okay. Well, so as long as you two support, Darren, I just direct you, work with Jessica, start to put together the plan for how we're going to have this conversation and what kind of time frame we're having it in.
And we're going to have our 5-year program meeting here in the next month, or about a month from now, so we can. I think we're fine leaving it like it is till then if we want to look at the big picture and then decide what to do with it after that. It's up to you, or we can go ahead and get started.
One possibility that I'd ask to consider, maybe this is a terrible idea, but if we want to make sure that we're generating as many comments as we possibly can, we consider temporarily closing the bridge pending the outcome of our conversations, because if you close it down, now anybody who uses it from anywhere is going to notice.
True.
So just something for you guys to consider.
Okay. I just put this in here. You can't read it, but that's just a reminder of the 5-year program discussions coming up. I plan to have that April 2nd board meeting to present the 5-year program, possibly a week before that if I can get ready in time. But April 2nd is the latest I could have it, because I need to have it on the week later, April 9th, for actual approval.
Right.
So that's my plan at this point. And another part of that discussion is going to be 600th Avenue if we want to apply again to get that farm to market. And
which we got to look at our entire farm to market system if we're going to do that.
We got to take one off to put that one on. So plan on having that discussion as part of the five-year program meeting.
And Grant?
That was my next bullet here is Grant. I just wanted to update a couple of things on Grant, too. We've been working with Iowa State, or Intrans. They were researching some high traffic or high accident count gravels. And the results of that, a couple of things we got out of it, between Grant and then 550th was the other one they studied, south of Story City. We got about $1,000 worth of signs. We're going to replace every sign and bring it up to current standard and brightness. So that was a grant. So that'll all be free to replace all those signs. The other thing that came out of that is they're working with the sheriff's office. They're going to fund increased enforcement on Grant for 1 or 2 days during school. One of the things we're considering is lowering the speed limit, but we don't want to do that until after they do this speed enforcement. We don't want to lower the speed and then give a bunch of tickets the next week. So they're going to do the speed enforcement sometime this spring. They haven't tied down the dates for that yet to see what we got out there. But as part of the study, they actually had traffic counters out there that had speed on it, and it had some pretty interesting numbers. The vast majority was, 45 to 50 miles an hour. Then you had 5 or 10% that were just 60, 70, just off the charts. People going way too fast out there. So, but also been a lack of accidents the past 2 years. We haven't had any, so it's taken a big drop off, too. So I don't know what we do with all that information, but in the short term, that's what's going to happen. There's going to be an enforcement out there. The new school won't be open by then, so we could have a whole set of new circumstances next the year after, but those are the options we're still considering, speed limits and stop signs.
Yeah, we're still talking about stop signs on 1A, turning that into a four-way.
We are. I have some concerns about that.
Absolutely. I just think it's important that we have the full conversation.
Sure. With the gravel road and that much traffic, when you put stop signs in, you're just going to create a washboard mess. Traffic going straight through doesn't create the washboards like the stop conditions. And there are also warrants for stop signs, and that's what we use for the east-west stop and that. And I think that solved the accident problem at the intersection. There wasn't many, but that ought to resolve that. But the warrants for a four-way stop are much higher, and this doesn't come anywhere close to meeting the warrants for a stop sign. So I do have concerns with the stop sign, but I think the speed limit is probably more of a possibility.
And as I understand it, Ames is starting to seriously talk about, well, with the subdivisions that are on their docket right now, starting to seriously talk about paving from 190th south, which I think we still have a portion of Grant south of 190th.
Correct.
And so I just think we need to stay aware of what's going on there so that we can have this full conversation. This is something that's not going to go away for us. So,
a couple more items when we have that five-year program discussion I just wanted to bring up quick so you're thinking about them. This is Elwood, which is now University, south of Ames. The new web filings went in here, and they put the parking lot here. I reported to you in my last report, they had requested we pave the stretch because of dust issues with the parking lot. But since that meeting, Iowa State has now, I don't know if Web Filings talked to Iowa State too, but now Iowa State's looking at expanding the research park down there. Iowa State already owns it. So they're already talking about paving additional length anyway, so that'll help our situation. I don't know how soon that could happen at this point, but that's something to keep in mind. But another issue, same road. This is the new location of the Ames tree and brush site, yard waste. That's created. I have concerns about dust. There's a lot of houses right here. I requested, and when it came through for the conditional use permit, that they provide dust control. The city of Ames required dust control, I think 800 feet each way of the site. But then I said, you got to put dust control in front of these houses at least, because there's one free day in April. And we'll probably be well over 1,000 vehicles a day on that gravel road for that one day. I don't know what kind of traffic is going to get the rest of the season, but it'll be increased definitely. So I'm not sure what they turned that. They just did dust control up the intersection. So We might have some upset people up here, and I'm not quite sure what we do about it at this point, but we'll see how the first... It's in April. You're not quite sure what the roads are going to be like in April. It could be wet and not be a problem with dust at all, but that's the new permanent site, so this is going to be an issue year after year. And this road in general, it was on our five-year program at one point to pay until we upgraded R38.
It's one of our more heavily traveled
gravel
roads, right?
Yep. And Iowa State uses it a lot now to get out to these facilities. They have classes out there now. But that's one area to keep in mind. Another recent request, this is Boone County Line, Highway 30 here, Lincoln Highway. This was apparently up for sale. One of the persons that was looking at buying it wanted to change the accesses over to this road, so they want it paved. So that's something I'll discuss at our five-year program meeting. The city of Ames is also, I think, looking at this area for possible annexation. I don't know how soon that would happen. This is a little more minor, but this is a recent request. This is also Boone County Line, R38, north of Ames, Eagle Ridge Subdivision up here.
Right.
When this was put in 6-8 years ago, they were required to pave this little stub. Well, they weren't required. They wanted it paved, so they paid to do it. You can see that it's got a bit of an edge rut problem. Everybody cuts it when they take that turn. It was kind of nice when the photo was taken, they had a car turn, so you can see it is possible to stay on the road when you make that turn. It doesn't matter where you put that, they always cut it. So they want it built out. They had it engineered. So my perspective was that if they want to build it out, they can do it. I'll work with them, but they need to pay. But I guess he didn't like that answer, so he wanted me to pass it by the board. If you disagree with me, let me know, but otherwise I'm going to tell them that it's probably their responsibility. We have those intersections all over the county. We can't build them all out, so if you think it's necessary, I'll work with you to get it done.
But what is he talking about building it out? Once
they put the radius in here, but they want it much bigger.
Oh,
I should have done it right in the first
place.
Yeah,
right.
So I told him it'd be more than likely their responsibility, and I will get back to him on that.
I'll give you my feeling. I see that as something the county could talk about, but there are you've been through some big ones are much higher on the list than that one.
Right. Let me put another one on your list because I've had a couple of calls on this. Okay. I can't remember the number of the street or the avenue. It goes south from the Palestine Lutheran Church.
Oh yeah, that's been a hot one for a number of years.
North of that, because the city of Huxley paved that north of there.
Yep.
Polk County has paved it south of there. So there's pavement north of there, a mile of gravel that's unpaved, and then...
It's a mile or a half mile off the interstate, so it's difficult for us to fund a paved road just a half mile off the interstate, but Polk County paves all their gravel roads because of the casino money they have. So we got a one-mile stretch of gravel road.
I've just had a couple of calls from one of the residents that lives on there, and they do get a lot of traffic.
It does.
Because people know that it's not a
railroad. It's come up a lot in the past, too, but we extended the one S-14, similar situation. We had that 1 mile left unpaved, and when we paved that one, we had the same discussion on that one. At that time, we couldn't justify it, but that does come up a lot, too. So I'll remind you that again next month.
Okay. Sure.
I we get a lot of large movers come through, but I just wanted to point this one out to you for a couple of reasons. Having issues with this hauler, and I might have to ban them from hauling in the county, so you might get some questions on that. There's a number of reasons why, but he was already on probation. His last move, he was required to notify us when he moved because he was going to get into a lot of signs, and he didn't do it. Same situation here, but this one dealt more with trees. That's such a large load. I put additional requirements that if he had to cut trees in people's yards, there's a house right here. He had to contact them and make sure it was okay. I think he did that in a lot of areas, but this one, he asked, and they said, no way, don't touch any of my trees. So he told me he was fine and could get through. That wasn't the case. So we have a very upset landowner here. He said we'll be hearing more from him, but I don't know at this point. what he can really do. It's hanging so far over the roadway itself. I told him we do have some rights to at least cut them off, but this is the after picture. Not a lot of difference, but you can see some of those were cut off.
Sure.
That's when he was going through. Right across the street from that, this one upset me more. He took a big branch off and actually fell down on the person's fence, but this one, I believe they came back and picked that up that day, but there's a number of other ones like this. They cut some pretty good-sized branches off, and they just left them there. This was the next day, out into the road, and this was the big fight we had. They put salt down on our gravel roads, and you don't do that in the winter. He called me in the morning, 3 hours before the move, and he let it slip out that his salter was out there. I was like, what? I was like, no, you're not putting salt in our road. And he goes, darn, I shouldn't have told you I was going to do that. Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm dealing with. And then he went and did it anyway. Our operator stopped him, said no more, and they pretty much told him where to go and said we're doing it anyway. We've had to add rock to this because salt will just keep going right through your base and just make a complete mess out of your roads in the winter. So that was just one of the four or five issues we had with this hauler. And
well, I just think that this is an area, again, based on what you've just shared with us, that you consult with Attorney Jessica and figure out what action we need to take. I see no other option available at this point in time when you've got a person who is not willing to cooperate with you. Just do what we feel is necessary.
And just so you're aware, in a situation like this, we had to move a lot of signs too, and we had that worked out ahead of time, and we bill him for our time, and we have to actually remove the signs when he's coming through. So we had it all worked out ahead of time, but with this mover, it never goes as planned. And
I just echo Wayne's comments. Work with Jessica, get this one handled, come back with a recommendation. I don't know if we're the ones that have to take action if we're going to ban a mover, but come back with some kind of recommendation to us. And then the second thing is I'd like to understand what the county's rights are for overhanging limbs. I mean, if we're going to have an upset landowner, it seems to me that something that's overhanging our roadway, that falls into the public domain somehow.
It's a difficult question that nobody's really been able to answer at this point. There's a code section that says if trees are in front of a residence, they do have some rights, even if it's in the right-of-way, unless it causes, you know, material interference with the road or drainage. This you can claim, but usually we say if our mortar guard can get through, it's fine. This was a 33-foot wide house, and I don't know how high is that.
Is it reasonable? Yeah, absolutely. Reasonable? I just want to understand what the rights are of everybody.
Sure.
So
okay.
Good.
Just quick on our rock hauling contract for this spring is we're just down to two townships now. This is what we contract Martin Marietta to haul rock. It'd be Nevada Township and Indian Creek Township. We usually do a little bit more than this, but we're going to haul some more ourselves, and it's getting more expensive because this is longer hauls than we normally do. This is usually gravel on this half of the county, but a lot of these roads get limestone rock already because they're heavily traveled roads, but there might be a few in here that might be seeing the white rock for the first time, so I just wanted to point that out to you.
But that's going to double axle. One of the reasons we did that is so that we can haul more.
Right? We'll haul more. This will be contracted two townships, and we're going to try to get at least two more done ourselves. We used to kind of be on a half the county a year. That's not going to, we don't have the funding to do that anymore. So we're almost down to a quarter. But a lot of counties are doing that.
Yep.
Update on the MAP 21, the federal transportation program. Just quickly, very little changes. As I mentioned in the past, the funding stays about the same. The only area I wanted to point out that changed down towards the bottom, we still have a bridge fund. It splits it out as a bridge, so we have to spend that money on bridges. It had always been required in the past. It wasn't this time, but the state of Iowa decided to keep it there for bridges only, and this is the road money. But this is what I wanted to point out, the bike trail portion of the funds, they're now called TA, Transportation Alternatives. This 3.4 has to go towards enhancements, which is the bike trails and stuff like that. But there wasn't an additional... This is at 3.4. No, I'm sorry. The 4.4 has to go towards the TAs. This was optional. It came in from the side, and you could put it towards the TAPs only, or what we decided is a CERPA group. We're just going to send it right into our STP, which is our road money, meaning you have the option. You can spend it on road, or you can spend it on bike trails, but it didn't restrict that $3 million to go, because it would have increased what we spent in the past on bike trails. We're just going to stick with the 4.4, which is a little bit of a reduction from past funding, but it still doesn't. We're splitting that over, 11 counties, so it doesn't go very far for bike pass anyway, but as a group, we decided to not restrict ourselves there. And the other I wanted to point out, the MPO, Ames MPO, took in Gilbert. They changed their boundary, and by doing that, it was actually a little bit more than I thought. That'll take out $55,000 a year out of the county STP portion, and we researched that, and we got down that there wasn't really the county could do anything about that. It, because of the last census, the urban area boundaries changed, and they have to follow those lines, so there wasn't a lot we could do about it, but that will decrease our annual STP money by $55,000 a year. Lastly, I wanted to talk just quick legislation. Not a lot of action so far this year at the State House. ISAC's pushing the fuel tax increase. Can't say I'm real optimistic about it this year. I thought last year was our year to get it done, and it's being talked about again, and we're doing what we can to give them information, whatever they need to get this done, but not real optimistic about it, unfortunately.
Is it accurate, Darren, a 10-cent fuel tax increase would bring roughly an additional $700,000 to Story County?
Yeah, correct. I want to point out I'll be on vacation the week of March 11th, and then Farm Bureau meeting tonight. The last two things.
Herper, do we meet this Thursday or not?
Not received anything yet.
I haven't
yet.
Received anything either.
We met last month, didn't we?
I know.
So it's bi-monthly now, so...
Oh, that's right. So that week of the 11th, I'll be in D.C.
March? Okay.
Second week.
I'll be gone too then, so I'll look into that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Next item, conservation. Hi, Mike. Thanks for waiting. It's after lunchtime.
All right. Well, I guess good afternoon, gentlemen. Let's see. I won't take up a lot of your time today. Darren had some pretty impressive pictures of some of our snow events we've had, and luckily, before that came, you know, we didn't have very much snow, and so our staff was able to get out in the field a little bit more than maybe usual. Last winter was again a good winter to get in the field, but this year we were able to get some more prescribed burns done before the snow came. So we did burns at Robinson, we did burns at Hickory, we did burns at McFarland Park. So we got quite a few of those done. Worked with CCI group again, as we've done in the past, at Robinson Wildlife Acres, and again, real good success there, working with that group and getting some restoration work done in some degraded savanna. We also just recently completed some water conservation energy upgrades at the Conservation Center. Remember, that was funded in this year's budget to do some upgrades in the restrooms and the lighting and HVAC system right there. The restrooms had the old, some of the fixtures in the restroom had the old tank flush system that ran continually. Once the tank filled up, it flushed. tank filled up again, it flushed. And so it's been years like that, and we finally were able to, with this project, get auto flushes and installed on all of the fixtures, urinals and toilets, and on the lavatories as well. So so that's done. Auto sensors on the lights, the fans as well, so less apt to leave lights on. So similar to what you have in this building. That was a nice addition. And then also replaced an old water fountain with an accessible water fountain at the entrance to the building, the little lobby there. Let's see, in addition to our burns, we did some brush clearing. Did some more brush clearing. We have an attachment for one of our only bobcat that's able to get in and do some clearing of larger brush. And so we've been putting that to use. We've used it quite a bit at Skunk River Flats. If you're familiar where that is, south of, on the east side, on the east side of the interstate, south of Ames there along the Skunk. Had quite a bit of success with that. It seems to make really quick time of things that took quite a bit of time in the past to do. This does it a lot faster. We do need to be careful about where we use that piece of equipment, and we will be very mindful of that. We don't want to put it into, say, sensitive areas. You do get a lot of resprouting after that. It's not really possible to very effectively go in and spray or do stump treatment once you've been through with that. So we kind of need to be careful about where we use it, but that's proven to be a real nice asset to our inventory. Again, this time of year now, particularly once the snow is on the ground, or was for a while there, take that opportunity to do PM on equipment. And so we've been busy with doing PM at both of the shops. We did submit a couple grant applications, one to to the DNR Wildlife Diversity Program for, again, some more invasive clearing, that'll be done primarily at Dakin's Lake. And then we also submitted one to National Wildlife Foundation for work at Hickory Grove. Now, we have completed, and I think I may have mentioned this the last time I was here, the Hickory Grove Watershed Management Plan has been completed now, has been submitted to the state for review and approval. That watershed management plan, of course, it addresses the entire watershed, not just the park area, but we have, of course, the primary responsibility for management inside the park. The plan did recognize several points of gully erosion that could be addressed and lessen the sedimentation in the lake. So we are submitted for this grant to correct some of that gully erosion, clear out some of the understory. Again, lots of honeysuckle, and once that understory brush gets to the extent it blocks out sunlight, you don't have grasses, forbs growing on the ground. So therefore, you got a lot of bare soil. That's highly erodible soil. That's a Lester class soil, which is a highly erodible class of soil. And with that, you know, it just begs the situation of gully erosion. So we're trying to do that. And let's see, I guess the other thing, as far as our field operations go, the Conservation Board did approve placement of a couple memorial benches. We did get some requests from the public to put memorial benches at a couple of our facilities, one at Hickory Grove and one at Wakefield Woods. And so Conservation Board approved placing those. Donors, of course, supply the bench, and we install it sometime as it's volunteer installed as well. So we'll have those going in. As far as our school programs, it's that time of year with school in session, of course, that we're busy. We have done, to date, just give you some numbers, we've done 323 in-class presentations, 288 outdoor experiences, i.e. field trips, getting kids outside, and we've had 8 service learning programs, and that's year to date. So add all those up as far as contacts, and that's about 15,000, just over 15,000 people that have been part of those programs. So So that's going very well. You're probably familiar, the DNR just recently stocked trout at Ada Hayden. DNR has been looking at their stocking program and looking at the cooperation they get from communities when they go and when they do this. And they've really found that they need to bolster that. So there was a very concerted effort here in Story County to get the word out about it, and lots of partner organizations helped with the event. We were one of them. We supplied, I think 50, 60 little schoolies, ice fishing rods there for anyone that didn't have a rod. And so no one was turned away because they showed up and didn't have a rod, they couldn't fish. Drilled holes for them, etc. So it went really well. Got lots of kids involved in it. You maybe saw the press on it. Lots of different organizations were involved, and it was very well received. So that's something we look forward to continuing to do. And one thing of note, they are DNR has noted over trout that are summering over there in Ada Hayden. So of course, we won't get any reproduction, but we do have some that are summering over. So it's deep enough, the water temperatures are cool enough that they're able to survive, so which is impressive after last summer. Very impressive. Let's see, as far as another grant, we did submit another grant to Walmart to purchase some digital cameras for our summer nature camps, so haven't heard back on that. If we get that, that would be a nice addition to our nature programs, our summer camps. And we have just started two new programs, education programs. One we call Wild Tots, and had a really good, we've had it once now, a really good turnout. And in fact, we had people on a waiting list wanting to get in. It exceeded what we could handle. So that was really nice. The other one is environmental literature series, and we're doing that monthly over the winter. We've just completed two now, and again, we have a waiting list on that. We have more people wanting to get in than we can handle. So those are really, really good programs that are being well received. Now, looking forward, this Saturday, if you're available, Trek the Trails is this Saturday at McFarland Park. Something that Carol's here. She works hard on this along with lots of other partners and volunteers. Big event. I think, what did you say, right now our registration's down a little bit this year, 65 people.
65 people. It's going to be like 15 degrees, so perfect day to come out and run 4 miles, right? You won't need snowshoes.
Run? You had me till it was run.
You can walk.
I got a spot right beside me on the gator. You can sit on it.
My speed, right there.
And the hot chocolate stand.
So anyway, that's a good program. Carol and I were just chatting on the way over here why we think we're a little bit lower this year than we have. We're competing with some other events. There's a new event, I think. What did you say, Des Moines? That's
it's not new, but it's
happening
this year. So we're planning all the red flannel.
Good.
So that's a good one. Another one that we're getting ready to do is a new event called, we're just calling it Fishing Opportunities in Story County. We're partnering with the Ames Anglers Club and the ISU Fishing Club and DNR to do that. We'll host it at McFarland. That's Saturday, March 2nd. That'll be a good event, open to anyone. Come out and learn a little bit about where fishing opportunities are in the county, what you can use for to get started with that. It'll be geared, it's really going to be geared, some of it toward kind of fishing 101, or entry level people to some of it. Of course, as you can imagine, with some of those clubs and the experience of fishermen in the community, it's incredible. So there'll be some in-depth discussions there probably also. But that's a good event. If that goes well, I look forward to considering some other kind of sister events like hunting in the county and trails, etc., you name it. The other one we're working on, again, Carol's working on, is Spring Partners Festival. Mark your calendar. That's May 5th. So, and that will be at McFarland as well. You know, it's interesting listening to some of the discussion that you guys have had this morning. One thing that comes to mind is it has been estimated the physical inactivity in Iowa costs the state $5.3 billion annually. Maybe a figure you're aware of, but it's been estimated that physical inactivity costs us $5.3 billion. Of course, that's lost productivity, that's medical expenses, workers' comp, all of those things combined. If you prorate that to the population of the state and the population of the county, that's $153 million for Story County. $153 million. So when we talk about issues like the programs that we try to get people outside, whether it be school kids, whether it be adults, Trek the Trails, whatever it may be, whether it be trail projects, you know, that's one of the reasons why we try to do that, is to really provide opportunities for people to get out. People that live within a mile of a trail are 50% more likely to meet the national physical activity guidelines than people that don't live in that proximity to the trail. So, you know, you hear us talk about trails a lot, and I was glad to hear Darren say that there might be some more funding available for trails, and these are the reasons why. That's why you hear us talk about it a lot. So, just one set of facts there that I thought I'd let you know as I heard that other discussion. As far as the administration side, you know, we have been working with Iowa DNR and Story County Pheasants Forever to do a land purchase northeast of Roland. That has closed. So we are the owners of that 80 acres of that's enrolled in the Wetlands Reserve Program. Owner will farm it this year. This next summer we'll take possession in after harvest. So. We're working right now with NRCS to develop the wetland plans for that project.
Good.
So that's moving along really well. We're also in having some discussions with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation on a property that they are now the recent owners of, just took possession of it. Up until now, they have been coal holders on a conservation easement with us, and the property has been in private hands. It is along the Skunk River. It's a parcel that has a lot of uniqueness as far as the natural features on it. It's not developed. It's about 30 acres. Landowners, like I said, just recently sold it to the Natural Heritage Foundation. So we're discussing now with the Heritage Foundation on kind of the future of that site. The idea when that original conservation easement was done is that it would likely become the property of the county, that land. Of course, that's one thing the Natural Heritage Foundation is interested in doing is maybe selling a portion of that land and donating the remainder to the county. So that's something that you'll likely hear from us more on in the future. A couple staffing issues. One, we just advertised summer positions for this year, and we have a couple new summer positions that we're hiring. We took the same pot of money, so same budgeted amount. We kind of reallocated a little bit and made a couple new job descriptions for summer staff. One is natural resource aid, so someone that can, I guess, really specialize more on natural resource management, mostly vegetation management. Another is a park ranger aide, so someone that can help with maybe a campground observation, beach observation, those kinds of things. So I think that'll be nice. We'll see how it goes this year with that, and if we can provide some specialized experience and better meet our objectives, that would be great. That's what we're trying to do. We have completed staff evaluations as well. And then one other trail issue that we've been working on for years, Carol's been working on this, is the Skunk River Water Trail. You will see some evidence on the ground here soon of progress there. Couple things that will be going on. One is we've designed interpretive kiosks to go at select access points along the river. So those will be installed in the spring, and those we worked with, actually had a grant to develop those with DNR, and they're using that product as a template across the state now. So we worked with DNR, with the Skunk River Paddlers, with a consulting firm on designing those, and so those will be very nice addition. Eventually, we'll probably have more of those at different access points, but for right now, we're just doing a select number of access points. We'll get those up in the spring. The other thing that will be coming up soon with that is additional, or I should say, road signage, directional signage to get to the access points. So again, that's state funded. They are producing those signs. We've kind of had an exhausting effort to design those signs and decide where they're going to get placed, etc. So that's all done now, and we're just ready to get those signs on the ground. So that'll be coming this spring as well. And with that, the state's interested in looking at the water trails not just as a recreational opportunity, but using that as a way to look at the, kind of the holistic health of the system, if you will. And so we're very interested in going down that trail with them. So we'll look at that. We'll work with partners, and we'll look at maybe, water quality. We'll look at health of the system. We'll look at pollution, all kinds of things with doing that. T&E inventories that haven't really been done. So I'd like to use this water trail. The state's interested in doing it, and use this as a platform to really help us do a management plan for the water trail, which you can imagine doing a management plan for, 80 acre tract is one thing of land, but doing one for a water trail is a whole nother can of worms. So it's nice to have their interest in doing that and support. Another thing we just completed is a strategic plan. We've been working on this for about a year, and we've now completed it. The Conservation Board just approved the strategic plan at its last meeting. So that has been done. Now we will take that and check back to that on a regular basis and develop work plans off of that on an annual basis. So it's nice to have that. I'll make sure, if you don't have that yet, I'll make sure you guys all get copies of that. Darren mentioned some legislative issues. A couple things I wanted just to mention here along that line as well. The governor's proposed budget reduces funding to the Lakes Program at DNR, reduces funding to the Water Trails Program, to the Watershed Review Board, and to the Recreational Trails Program. Some of those, I can say, will have an impact on what we offer, and some of those I would have to say that they may have an impact on what we offer here in the county. Lakes Program in particular, we know that we have a lot of work to do at Hickory Grove with the Watershed Management Plan. We know that the Lakes Program is supportive of this effort, and they have designated funds right now. If their funding is reduced, they're going to be forced to have to redesignate funds to projects that they're already started. Ours isn't started yet. So that's a concern for us. water trails, I just talked about that, if funding gets reduced for that, et cetera. Watershed Improvement Board, that is a source of funding for our watershed work at Hickory Grove. WERB grants, Watershed Improvement Review Board. We have full intentions of applying for funding through that to help us do some of the watershed work there. And I know you've had some conversations with Margaret Janes about our issues there as well, in particular the septics within the system. So thank you for your consideration on that. And anyway, we'll continue to watch those budget issues down at the Capitol. I'm planning on going down to REAP Day, which is February 26th, I believe, down at the Capitol. And let's see. This, I guess another thing as far as the legislative issues. Representative Eisenhart had hosted a series of environmental, a listening session on environmental issues. He hosted three or four of these around the state. One of them was here in Ames and was very well attended, as you can imagine. Was held at Iowa State, and there was probably in excess of a couple hundred people there. Very, very well attended. And you can imagine some of the common themes that were mentioned. Water quality is a common theme. Trails, condition of our state parks, REAP funding. Governor's proposed it again at $12,000. Full funding for REAP is $12 million. Full funding for REAP is $20 million. So we haven't been able to full.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it, Dan?
Fund it. Watershed Improvement Review Board was another one. Land and Water Conservation Legacy Funding, Chronic Wasting Disease. There was a lot of equestrians there that talked about equestrian use of trails. That was a common theme. And another one that's familiar with you guys is state's regulation of confinement operations. That was a very common point of discussion at the meeting. So it was nice to have that was attended by five legislators. It was nice to have them on board and hear those kind of comments. What really kind of disheartened me is that some of them had not heard that level of discussion about environmental issues in the past, and that's a little disconcerting. And I guess one final note, the Conservation Board did pass pass a motion to endorse supporting a 3/8 of 1 cent sales tax increase that would go toward land and water conservation fund. there is a bill right now, it's in the House Ways and Means Subcommittee, that has been introduced to increase the sales tax by 3/8 of 1%. That is under review right now. That is for your notes. That's House File 92, and that funding, of course, would be spent throughout the state if that goes into play, and through many funding mechanisms. Presumably, some would come back to the county. Story County early estimates show Story County generating $3.2 million through that tax. So. I think we could hope that we would see some portion of that.
But there's no mechanism in HF 92 for it to come back straight back to the counties. It would be controlled by who would control the dollars?
I'm not sure that all of those mechanisms have been identified. I need to check on that yet.
Well, as we've seen in other areas, Mike, sometimes an idea like that you hope. The dollars that are, you would hope that the dollars that would be coming out of Story County would ultimately end up benefiting residents of Story County, and that's not always the case. And so that would be my concern is, okay, who's controlling these dollars and how are they determining how they're distributed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're probably familiar with the I Will referendum, and the vote on that was in 2010, 72%. And I don't want to misquote the number anyway, significant, 70 years, either 65-72% is what that passed by. And that was that if the sales tax does get raised. In fact, this is constitutional now. The next time the sales tax is raised, the 3/8 of 1 cent would go toward this fund. So what this House file does is essentially forego that normal 1 cent raise in the sales tax or whatever it may be, and just institutes this as a standalone to raise the sales tax. So expect to hear more on that in the future.
Yeah.
Well,
super. Any questions for Mike? Nope. Mike, thanks, man.
Thank you. Very, very thorough. Thank you. Very good.
And let's see. The good news is we're about halfway through our agenda. So.
Getting there. We're getting there.
Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates.
I'll just quickly say that I met with Deb yesterday, and pretty much of what she shared with us today was the scope of our discussion. We focused a little bit on the upcoming meeting next week, talking with regionalization and so forth, but she will plan to probably highlight some of those things when she shares, comes up a little bit later with us. But by and large, it was just an update of information that was shared from the asset as well as future mental health issues.
Super. Paul, anything? Nope, pass for me. Other reports, discussion of Country Club bike lanes, Country Club Road bike lanes. Back to Darren. Well, this has been the Darren Moon Show today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Rebob.
Thank you.
Oh, only $430,000.
Okay. Final plans for the Country Club bike lanes are due the 19th of this month, so that's kind of our point of no return. Once we send those into the DOT, we're pretty much committing to do the projects. So there's a couple of funding issues we wanted to go over here. It's the first one. We met with the committee last month, and we decided to reduce it down to 5-foot bike lanes instead of 6, and that's going to be a cost-saving measure. That'll help. The next issue was the $25,000 that Aveda was going to commit to the project. There was no agreement in place. We do have that in place now.
Good.
They actually approved it last night at the council meeting. So when I get that back, we'll send it to the board to approve as well. But that just essentially commits them to the $25,000. You can see adding up all the funding sources on that list, we come to $392,000 out of the $430,000, which is our latest cost estimate. That leaves $38,000 left to be raised in private donations. And then talking with Laura, the difficult part of that $38,000 is you can't really raise it until they know for sure the project's going to move forward, because if they give the money before and the county pulled out, they couldn't get the money back. So that's her difficult part of her fundraising.
Excuse me, what do you mean you couldn't get it back?
Because once they donate it to either the county or to wherever the holding funds are going to be, you're essentially, you can't take that back once you donate it.
Well, but wouldn't it carry over? Say if it was... You weren't able to do it in this short time frame, you could extend.
Yeah, it essentially be there for that project only.
Yeah,
their
right,
concern
right,
is if
right.
The project didn't happen at all, they couldn't get the money back.
Oh. Huh.
But nobody wants to donate till they know for sure it's going to happen.
I could kind of see that, if that's the carrot.
Yeah. That's what she's struggling with.
Well, it seems to me there's got to be a way, and it's time to have another conversation with Laura. There's got to be a way for somebody to open an account somewhere and start to put these dollars in with the understanding that nobody's going to access those dollars until the work is actually done. I mean, clearly, the county, our role in this is going to be to fund this project and then collect and hopefully collect enough from everybody else so that we end up where we've just got the $200,000 in the game, which is what we've committed to. But there's got to be a mechanism for her to go ahead and start collecting some dollars without it I mean, we're far enough down the road, this thing's going. We're getting this done. It's time for her to start putting some dollars in there, and I'm actually kind of encouraged that it's $38,000. I thought it was substantially more than that because I think she's a lot of the way home in terms of informal commitments.
I think that's kind of been my understanding in my conversations with her is that she's got a lot of commitments for the money, and they're concerned about, like Darren said, you know, once they donate the money, if they write the county a check or whatever it is, and the project flops,
I wouldn't.
The county's money, it's not going back to them.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean,
there's got to be a way to open an escrow account, or there's got to be a way to open something where those dollars can go ahead and get committed. Carol, yes.
What they were looking at is using the Story County Committee.
Up here. That's right.
What Laura mentioned was that they were going to use the Story County Community Foundation. They can set up a fund to take those dollars, and then we can get reimbursed from that fund. So the problem isn't so much the mechanism as an assurance of when this is going to happen. I think actually the $38,000, I think she was very confident that that was not going to be a problem, especially reducing it down to the 5 feet. So. So I think the mechanism is there. She needs to start that fund, and she needs the first donor, and she's got that set up. It's just an assurance of this is going to happen.
Right, and I don't know what we can do to assure that it's going to happen other than exactly what we've done. This board has never balked, not once. We push it. I mean, you know, you can do what you can do, but I don't know how we can assure anything more than we have. We've committed to the county being the primary funder. We've committed to the county floating the full amount and trying and hoping to collect from everybody else. Fortunately, now we have an agreement with NMEDA. If that frustrates me a little. If they're not confident that we're doing everything we can do, I don't know what we can do at this point.
I don't think it's that they're not confident in that. I think, Darren, your next step is to go through that the next process, right? And you need to feel confident in that we're going forward at that point too, correct?
Yeah. Like I said, my next step, there's really no point of return once I submit those in. You're committed to with the federal aid funding agreements and everything. You're locked in, so I need to be assured we have a backup plan if that money's not there.
So some of the confidence isn't on the residents' part. It's on the part on Darren's part, knowing that once he makes this decision, he can't turn around and go back on it.
Darren, what
so
money
once
are
he
you
makes
not
that
confident
decision
about?
Is, okay.
Huh? What money are you not confident about? When you go down this list, are you confident with everything you've got listed there except for the $38,000, or is there an item on here that you still question?
Well, then my next discussion is about some additional money we got to have available. This was kind of a change. It's a brand new spec of the DOT. It's all based on the number of bidders now. If you have five or more bidders, you have to accept a bid at 120% of our estimate.
If all five bidders are at the 120% level?
No.
No.
Just if there's five bidders, that bumps it up to 120. If the low bidders, 120% of your estimate.
That's what I'm saying. The only way it hits you is if all five of those bidders are 120% or above. If you get a bid at 94%, you still get to take the bid
true.
At 94%.
That's true. Just looking at Story County and our asphalt availability, my guess would be one to possibly two bidders. But there has been times when outsiders have come in, and you just never know. I knew as part of the federal aid funding agreement, you had to accept a bid at 110%, but this new DOT spec bumped it to 120 with those five bidders.
Sure.
So.
But that all comes back to me. How confident are you in the 430 estimate that you got there? Because we just opened bids today. Looks to me like your estimates are pretty solid. All said and done, you do a nice job.
Asphalt is a little bit of a different animal. It follows fuel prices. We don't know what it's going to be. And the nature of asphalt projects, I also put in the 6% contingency to account for overruns. When you put asphalt down, you pay for tonnage. And to get exactly the right amount on there is almost impossible. So you almost always have a little overrun to make sure you got the right amount. So that's that 25.8 is for contingency. Worst case scenario, we get more than five bidders. We get high bids. that's an additional $86,000. And if you add on that 25.8 contingency, you're looking at another $110,000 that the county would have to supply this project, even if the private donations are met at $38,000. So that's what we could be on the hook for.
Yeah, and I appreciate that it's in your nature to look at the absolute worst case scenario. I still go back to, I mean, hopefully you don't feel like this 430 estimate that you've got here is just pulled out of thin air. I mean, hopefully you think that's founded in reality.
I worked extra hard, something I don't normally, I actually worked with them and asked to come off that estimate to verify.
So at some point, and I think we've already done it, at some point you just jump off the bridge and you say, you know what, we're going, and I think we can find any number of reasons why we should be a little afraid of this. I view it that we're in. We're committed. We think the 430 is a pretty good number. We've got the dollars backing us up the rest of the way through. The flip side of this is, let's say we collect all the rest of these dollars and it doesn't come in at 430. Let's say it comes in at 410. Well, who gets the benefit of that? The county does. So that means that the county should be on the flip side. If it comes in, it's our estimate. If it's wrong, if it just doesn't work out that way, then sure, we're the ones on the hook, but we also get the benefit on the flip side. Am I seeing that wrong, Darren, or is that?
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with not having a backup plan at all, because it is possible this could happen, and what do we do?
Well, I think the important thing is understanding the options before you, as we move forward, and it's been presented to us, and it sounds like that I hate to use the word risk, but we feel that this will be an enhancement to the area, and we've, you know, obviously felt that way in order to agree to the $200,000 that we've kind of put in. So I think it's an area that we'd like to focus on.
Yes, I've done my job. I point that out to you. That's a possibility. That,
right, right. You've done your job there. So
well, and at the risk of making Lisa Murphy uncomfortable, clearly the $200,000. You know, we identified that as TIF funds. We've got that there ready to go. Any overage, if there were overage, that would just have to be a hit to our general fund. It's not reasonable to me that we would take that out of secondary roads, even though we could. If we commit to this, I think it's got to be a general fund hit, which, Darren, I would think would make you a little more comfortable that we're not going to ask you, oh, we got a $40,000 overrun, go cut something else out of your budget. That's not how we ever talked about this project, I don't believe.
No. I'm not concerned that way. It's okay. Just when we sign federal aid agreements, you get a little uncomfortable doing that one.
Sure.
There's no backup plan. That's
well, I would suggest that this board fully recognizes that the county is the ent of all these entities. The county is the one that's on the hook if there are overages over what we expect, what we've estimated, and we're counting on that this is a good, solid estimate. Does that work?
Sounds good.
All right. Do we need to take any action, or you wanted a comfort level before you submit on the 19th?
Yeah, I just want to make you aware that that's a possibility, and we'll submit the final plans. I also wanted to quickly just update. There was an ADA issue that we finally got resolved at DOT. There's some guidelines on putting a rail on the side if the ditch is deeper than 6 feet, and we finally got that squared away that it's an engineering judgment, so we're not going to put them out there. If they were required, it would probably end the project.
Yeah. Okay. So we feel good about moving ahead. Carol, I would ask you visit with Laura, and let's get going.
Move forward.
Okay.
Move forward.
Thanks, Darren. Thank you. All right. Next, the return of Deb as we talk mental health redesign.
I wanted to just bring you up to speed on a few bills that are in the legislature right now. But before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about the meeting that's next week, a joint meeting with Boards of Supervisors and CPCs from our partnering counties that will be held in Webster City. And two of the main items that will be looked at and discussed that day is a draft of the letter of intent, which is due April 1st to the Department of Human Services, and then a draft of a 28E agreement that Jessica is diligently working on. So those will be highlights of that particular meeting.
And I'll need to stop right there. Since all three of us are going to attend, Shelley, we need to make sure that that's posted, even though it's occurring in Webster City. We need to make sure that that's posted for us.
And I will have an agenda either late Friday afternoon or early Monday.
Thursday. It's Thursday. So
yeah,
if you get it Monday, we're still good.
Oh, the meeting's on the 21st. Yeah. Okay.
Which I keep calling the 22nd. Have you noticed that? I've been calling the 22nd.
21st.
Yeah.
Where is the meeting at? I mean, is it?
I'll send you directions. It's at the Hamilton County Community Services Building. So if you take the first exit into Webster City.
The Department of Corrections meets, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right west of the courthouse, isn't it?
Yeah, right there by the McDonald's.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Fairview.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yep, Fair Meadow or, yeah, yep. Exactly.
So, Deb, I just need you to send me the agenda so I can.
Okay.
That posted. All right. Great. Legislation. Few things going on. There are a couple of bills out there right now addressing transition funds. And then Medicaid state bills. And the one bill is House File 160 and House File 117. House File 160 will distribute about $1 million to the 26 counties that applied for transition funds, and the source of the dollars would be federal funds. And so there are some concerns around that due to the inflexibility of those dollars. And the Department of Human Services even wrote a letter to House leadership addressing or stating their concerns about using those dollars in the event that there's an audit at the federal level. And I've shared that letter with the board. I've also shared it with our local legislators just in hopes that there would be other thoughts about other sources of dollars used for this purpose instead of those federal dollars. $11 million.
Yeah. Is it 11.6 or 11.8?
11.6.
11.6. But here's my say, in the hope that somebody actually listens to our audio. It seems to me, we've gone through and we've talked about how the rainy day fund at the state is full, how we're doing so well on the budgeting, and how we want to stay away from using one-time dollars for ongoing activities. Well, this is a one-time purpose. It's a completely appropriate place to use one-time dollars. This is a completely appropriate place for the state to recognize that they're the ones who put the counties in this position. They need to step up to the plate and fully fund it, and fully fund it in the way that is easiest for counties to respond to what they need. And so it seems to me that it's as simple as $20 million of general fund dollars that need to come back out to the counties, and I would suggest in the ways that they were requested, and then let's move on and let's get into regions and let's get this thing figured out. Sorry, there's my soapbox.
Oh, no, that's a good segue. The one other thing that House File 160 contains is language in there about a non-contiguous county being part of a region, and that is
take care of Madison.
Yeah, that would, for our region, that would help Madison continue to be a partner county. I think they have to have at least 2 years of a previous formal kind of relationship, which would address that under the 28E agreement. House File 160 has had two amendments to it. House Amendment 1004, which was filed by Representative Heddens, and that brings the amount of dollars up to $20 million for transition purposes, and it changes the source of the dollars from federal dollars to state funds. It also allows counties to establish a repayment plan to the state for the Medicaid bills, so that offers a little more flexibility to counties. 160 on its own requires the counties getting transition funds to pay those state bills off by June 30th of 2013.
But you got to make sure you don't use any of the transition funds in order to pay it, which
exactly
creates some major cash flow issues.
It does. It does. Whereas counties that applied for transition funds and won't be receiving funds have until 2014 to pay off their state bills. But House Amendment 1004 allows there to be flexibility for any county that hasn't paid their state bills to make a repayment agreement. Then there's House Amendment 1006, and that's essentially everything that's in 1004, but then adds the non-contiguous county language. So that's what's out there right now in terms of the transition funds. There's also House File 117, which was Representative Hedden's bill that contains a lot of what's in her House amendment. So ISAC is registered against House File 160, and then Mr. Heckroth, who's the lobbyist for the Supervisors Association, is registered undecided at this point in time. Because ISAC is against it because of the auditing requirement.
The auditing requirement and the lack of funding, the $20 million, the 11 point. So realizing that we really need the 20, and so it was a question of making a firm statement that, this is unacceptable, but the auditing requirement was really the biggest, was a bigger issue.
Sure, we need two things. We need the full $20 million, and we need to have enough flexibility to actually be able to use the $20 million for anything mental health related, and I would go so far as to say as long as it was part of our state-approved plan. So, giving us dollars that we can't use to actually fulfill what we say is important to us seems a little silly to me.
Well, and that's hitting the nail on the head there, Rick, because the whole purpose of transition funds is to continue services, to restore services, and keep people in services. And it's sort of now shifted to how the state bills are going to be paid. That's not the original intent of transition funds, but it's just kind of been paired up with how dollars can or can't be
used. Well, here's the really hilarious thing. If the state were to say, yeah, it's $20 million, and we're doing it with general fund dollars, they would send Story County $1.2 million, which we would then turn around, add $200,000 to, and send right back to the state for the state bills of $1.4 million. It just seems to me to be the easiest solution. I got another solution for them. They can just forego all state bills, and we'll call it a day. That would work for me as well.
The other thing that the House Amendment 1004 does is allows, if there's the $20 million is allocated, it allows you to have an ending fund balance between 16.87% and up to 25%, so you can start off the fiscal year with some dollars to pay your expenses. House File 97 and House File 161 both add children to the funding responsibility of the regions. In House File 97, there's discussion about additional dollars that would be needed.
You think?
And House File 161 does not address any additional funding. So while it might be a good idea to have those services provided in the regional level, there needs to be dollars that follow.
Is that provided through DHS right now for children?
DHS is ultimately responsible for children's services, and there was a separate children's mental health work group throughout the process that was to develop the system, because there really isn't much of a system right now for kids. It's pretty patchwork. But children are not currently, as Senate File 2315 stands for regional responsibilities, children are not identified as a target population. So that's the other problematic thing there. And then lastly, House File 98 fixes a problem that about 45 counties in the state are facing in terms of having their levies lowered to the 4728. House File 98 would allow those counties to continue levying at the level that they need to be able to provide services. Not all 45 counties need to do that, but there is a handful within that.
And they're going to wait and tell them right after on March 16th that they can levy a different amount?
Eventually. There are three counties in our region that would be impacted by this. There are Wednesday morning meetings, just like last year, at 7:30 in the morning that a group of legislators are hosting to talk about MHDS issues, and I am trying to make those meetings as I feel left out and not having the right information if I'm not able to attend those. So those are supposed to occur throughout sessions, so that's where I am early on Wednesday mornings.
Well, Deb, we appreciate your work on all this.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
It would be nice if we could get some clarity sooner rather than later. I'm excited that we have our regional meeting next week, and hopefully we'll start to have some clarity of where the group of seven of us want to head. We really need the state to get off the dime and give us some clarity on where we're going. I mean, everybody's got preferences of how it should happen, and clearly I have a very strong opinion on how I think it should happen. But at this point, honestly, I don't care. I just want to know what it is, and then we'll deal with whatever it is.
That was the overwhelming sentiment at that meeting last Wednesday at the state supervisors meeting. You know what? We're ready to go. We're in the starting gate, and somebody at the state level's got their hand on the bell, and they're unwilling to pull the rope. I mean, let's get this done, get it going. I mean, it's just so frustrating to sit and wait, and they sit on their hands. They can't decide what they're going to do, and here we are. You know, once again, county government is where the rubber meets the road.
And we meet our deadlines. They tell us when we have to supply information and when we have to make decisions, and we meet those. But yet we don't get the information we need from them to be able to live up to those.
And actually, in terms of getting the region up and off the ground, we're trying to do it a year in advance. And I share your sentiment, Paula. It's very frustrating without there being administrative rules and little direction. I mean, they're telling us, well, you can ask for technical assistance at any point in time. You no longer have to wait until your letter of intent is submitted. But you know, when we give them ideas of what it is, we need more of an explanation on what core services are. You know, we need more of an explanation on what the structure should look like. We sit and wait. But I think we are doing our due diligence in keeping things moving along and making the progress that we are. And we, again, are in the position of dealing with what comes flying.
And I think that's probably more the rule than the exception, is that most of these counties know where they want to go. I mean, it sounds to me like that, you know, that the regions are pretty loosely formed at this point, and 2080s agreements are being drafted. And
is there any county that doesn't know where they want to go? I mean, even Polk wanting to be a standalone, they know what they want to do.
The map they showed last week, it indicated like that maybe there's a couple, three or four counties
that are still kind of waiting till the last minute to see how everything is going to shake out. But, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
All right, and we get to close out the day with Leanne Harder. Leanne, thanks for waiting. And thanks for bringing lunch. You did bring lunch, didn't you?
Yeah, I think you've got the record, Sanders.
Well, there's no doubt. And it's all based on me talking.
First thing is the annual report.
Looked really good. I just think you guys did a really, really nice job putting this together.
And on that, I'm just here to answer any questions you have on it. And I do have copies if you all in the peanut gallery would like a copy.
Oh,
thank you.
This peanut mold.
Shouldn't talk food.
I just really like the format that you put together here. It was clear. It was concise. It shared the information that I think is that you should be sharing. I just commend you on putting this together.
Thank you. There's a lot more that we could include, but we chose this year. I don't know if you recall last year, so it was several pages.
Yep.
We just chose to keep it really simple, and the only action, really no action, we just want you to know that it's done, and basically acknowledge that you've received it. And if you need anything for clarification on it.
Good to me.
I would say so acknowledged.
Very good.
Yep.
And we do have copies at our front counter. Okay, the next item is our work program. It is January through December 2013. We're already well into it. We did meet as a staff to go over some items that were identified by the board through budget session, work session, and as well as looking back over the past couple of years of projects we had in the pipeline, and then things that we'd once intended to bring forward but had not for one reason or another, and then a couple of new projects. So I just quickly, I know it's late, I do want to just focus on a few things. It's broken down, as I said, those identified by the Board of Supervisors and then those continuation, those new projects. Those board of supervisors are those that are listed on the screen, but if you look at the actual work program, it's the first block, first rows there. So you understand how we're implementing this. If you see up there, probably more than you want to know, but it's an Excel spreadsheet. And each of these items, you'll see we have an acronym, like Capital Improvements Plan is CIP. Planning Services to Communities, PCS. Each of those have a tab then that we're able to then collectively as a department put in different levels of specificity. And if you look at this one up here on the screen, the Planning Services to Communities, what we're thinking right now, we'd have three types of services, levels of services that are offered to communities, like a basic, that might be a per capita fee, a basic plus, you know, per capita plus a predetermined hourly rate, and then a B++. And then we've just started identifying what some of those are, comprehensive planning, everything from that down to just being a point of contact for these communities that are not necessarily open normal work hours like we are. We're open 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. Our next step on this, then, is to really identify, we've identified those services, and this is the detail that's in our spreadsheet that we're not asking you to, you know, contemplate, but just so you know that we're doing this level of detail in-house so that we can make sure that we achieve the pretty aggressive work program. But we'll be coming to you, you know, in a couple of weeks with a letter to send out to communities. That might be from you guys or it might be from us. We need to have that dialogue. And really by July, hopefully we have some agreements in place if this is something that communities want to see us provide. Then going on goal setting sessions, I picked out just specific things so you saw how we were building this. Again, the time frames are put out in the Excel spreadsheet. We have some key deliverables, and then kind of culmination is April 17th as a facility work session, and then it goes to someone else to do the work. The economic development RFP, you'll be seeing that here pretty soon. Well, after the budget work session, definitely, but I know Rick and I have had some discussions already on what you might like to see that look like. And then existing...
Planning on that getting in Jessica's hands next week to start to put the legal spin on it, and I think we're getting close to having something that ultimately will come before us.
The next, you know, next block are the existing projects that we want to bring forward, scanning. Just, again, that spreadsheet details that out, what steps and how we go from last week to the week of March 18th to finally say goodbye to that project. And the beauty of that is then we all can see where we need to be and assign priorities based on that. 2012 annual report falls in there too, and thankfully that one's done. We can let that one go. New projects then, these include looking at that Ames River Fringe Plan, that study area, that football between Ames and Gilbert to subdivision regulations review to code enforcement. Just again, picking and choosing. I looked at subdivision review starting really last week or this week, and then bring something to you in July. And overall, the spectrum, we have some projects that are ongoing beyond the time frame, just TIF projects. Then we have some that will be done this spring, then some that we won't even start till this fall. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions or comments you have on the work program.
I like it.
I think this is just, this is going to be tremendous for us, and I think one of the things that I would again, I don't want to caution us, but suggest that we might want to consider is adding one or two other days, whether it's one other day where we could just designate that, I don't know, within a calendar week that we're going to focus on for 3 hours and build in some blocks so that we can actually focus on some of the things as we're going through. You know, instead of it being all on a Tuesday, we may pick an alternate day.
Wayne, I think I agree with you, but almost set it up as a work session,
right.
It'll be published, but it'd be a one-item kind of deal,
right.
Leanne, where we just have you and/or your staff in front of us just to talk these things through. with no real action other than direction, and then whatever action that comes out of that would need to come back to us. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think starting with a document like this for us, but Leanne, a work product for you, I think is really helpful, and I'm going to copy it
for right.
The Board of Supervisors list that I have, some of which are can be cross-referenced, but I like it. Anything else? Leanne, anything else for us? Really, really well done.
I don't believe so.
Okay, really well done. Thank you very much. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public.
I have a two-hour speech.
Step up, Auditor Lucy Martin. Okay, she was. That's that. You know what? When we've been in for over 3 hours, there is no jokes allowed. Seeing no one move into the microphone. Announcements from the supervisors.
Just a friendly reminder of the annual Township Trustees meeting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Coffee and donuts provided, apparently. And doors open at, 8:45? Come on in. 8 o'clock. Okay.
And, yes, listen, I will be attending the IMWCA training at Altoona Fire Department tomorrow, so you guys can carry that forth. And one other thing, this morning I just got a email from Bill Heckroff that at the legislature there's a bill that's being proposed that will ban smoking in casinos, and wanted to know if supervisors would want to be registered in favor of that. And I told him I can't see why we wouldn't, even though there might be a couple supervisors at a couple counties where there are casinos that would be opposed to it. But it's consistent with our ISAC's position, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
That will be.
Smoking in casinos.
Any other announcements?
No.
Motion to adjourn.
No move.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We're adjourned.
Woo!